Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. In the first hour, we're going to be talking about the job numbers. They're in, and it's good news for the president. Unemployment has dropped below 8%, down to 7.8%, but the Republican conspiracy theorists, well, they're out there, they're whining, foe. Numbers are the numbers, my friend. Also, happy Manufacturing Day. Today is the day when we go, you know, hey, thanks a lot for all of the work that you 12 million men and women across this country who actually build stuff still. Thanks so much. We need to double that. You want to talk about a national initiative? Let's double our manufacturing capacity. Let's make sure that the things we buy, oh, I don't know, we build here. And on National Manufacturing Day, what we should be doing is committing ourselves to doing that, making sure that what we buy right here. Anyway, this hour we're going to be talking about Social Security, the Etch-a-Sketch presidential nominee, because it's commonly known, evidently, according to one of his surrogates, that politicians change their positions radically during a campaign. It's common knowledge. You know, they run on one thing, and then they completely change their mind and completely run in the opposite direction, all in the same campaign. So we're going to talk about Romney's grand conversion to the left and also Walmart workers taking to the streets. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. And one of those grand conversions. And now look, I'm somebody who believes you can have a grand conversion. I'm someone who believes you can change your position if it's heartfelt, if it's well thought out, and if it's at least honest. I mean, there have been things that I have changed my mind on over the years, but it's come with much deliberation, it's come with much thought, lots of research, and sometimes you go, you know, I was wrong. And you admit that, but, you know, you look at issue after issue after issue, Romney has really been all over every issue. I guess it depends on who you're standing in front of. And when he was standing in front of the folks down in Boca Raton, at the $300,000 per plate, and I wonder what a plate of food looks like for $300,000. I mean, does it come on gilded, you know, golden plates? Does it, is it served on the backs of workers' broken dreams? I don't know. But he says, you know, there, he told them there are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. There are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, he said, who believe that they're victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. And, you know, right after he said, I may have been inarticulate, but I wasn't wrong. And actually defended himself. And look, if that's your position, I'm with you. Okay, it's your position. Stand, fight on it. We can argue, we can debate, we can, you know, we can take that apart, do whatever we're going to do, but that's your position. Like, I have a lot of positions that, you know, people disagree with. And we can discuss that, which is why we have this program and this forum to discuss issues and talk about, you know, what is the best way to move this country forward? What's the best way to create a middle class and a working class, so my kids, when they grow up, they got a shot at the American dream. But when you come out on one day and you say, you know what, I was right, and I was just inarticulate. If you watch the video, and I truly believe this, if you watch the video, there's nothing inarticulate about it. He didn't stutter. There was no stammering. There was no pregnant pauses. None of that. He was very clear, very succinct, making his argument, making his case before the entitled. And that's what really struck me. I mean, those people in that room, you want to talk about an entitled class? Our billionaire class, they are the entitled class. They believe that they're entitled to everything that they can get their hands on. Every cent that they can grab is theirs. They're like the two guys, I was a truck driver for 20 years. We used to go to the big buffets. And I went with two guys. You know what they say if you want to make yourself look, I was like 360 pounds at the time. They say if you want to make yourself look slimmer, hang out with bigger guys. Well, these were two guys that made me look tiny. And they would go in and scarf up everything. They thought everything on that buffet was theirs. It's the same thing with the entitled class. Same thing with the wealth class. They think every morsel, every penny, every drop, every tax break, everything is theirs. And that they have no responsibility back. None whatsoever. So he goes, look, 47% of Americans pay no income taxes, which is wrong. But he says it anyway because this is what the right does. They continually repeat that. They pay no income taxes. Nonsense. They pay payroll taxes. They pay the Social Security, Medicare, all of that stuff. But state, local, all of that. But it doesn't fit the frame. They don't pay federal income tax. You're right, because they don't make enough money. And he says that his role is not to worry about those people. Those people. He says, I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. Personal responsibility, that's an interesting frame. Something Republicans used to talk about. And you listen to him and it comes right off of his tongue. Personal responsibility. Yet when you talk about health care, we can't have that. I mean, that's what blows my mind. But he said, it wasn't elegantly stated. I was speaking off the cuff. And yeah, he was. He was speaking off the cuff the way they speak to each other in their country clubs and in their little gated communities and at their $300,000 per plate events. So the question then becomes, do you believe that he says now, I was completely wrong? Do you buy it? Because now you really have to look at this guy in a different light. Is he truly having a grand conversion? Has he seen the light? Has he seen the ways of his errors? Has he seen the errors of his ways? Has he? Or is he just, lying because he wants to get elected? Is he just saying whatever he has to say to get elected? This idea that, I care about 100% of America. Uh-huh. Well, if you look at the tax plan that he has proposed, and I have, numerous economists and numerous learned folks who go, I just don't see how you're going to give across the board 20% tax reductions. And I love that. We're going to give it across the board, but we're going to raise the bottom rate. So those people at the 47%, we're going to raise their taxes. But it's a 20% across the board. You figure that out. I can't. Well, I actually can. He's, again, lying. And it is what it is. But you look at this and you go, okay, let's say we give these 20% across the board tax cut. How are you then not giving the very wealthy an enormous tax break? And he says, we're gonna close some of those loopholes. My first question is, A, for how long? And then B, which ones? Because it's evident that you don't even know which loopholes you're talking about. Because if you watch the debate, and this is one of the things that caught my attention, Obama had brought up the fact that, we're shipping jobs overseas and have been for almost a generation now. We've lost a good portion of our manufacturing because we say, okay, go, move your factory, move your plant, sure. And here, by the way, here's a bonus check on the way out the door. So Obama says, we're not going to subsidize. We're not going to give tax dollars to do that. And Romney responded with really a very, if you don't know any better, in a very authoritative way. Which, again, I blame Obama for not going, whoa, wait a minute. But Romney said, look, I've been in business for 25 years. I have no idea what you're talking about. I maybe need to get a new accountant, he said. But the idea that you get a break for shipping jobs overseas is simply not the case. It absolutely is. In fact, it is so the case that even Fox News reported that companies can claim deductions for the costs associated with moving jobs overseas. Fox News has said that. So you're telling me that Mitt Romney, the former head of the job-creating Bain Capital, doesn't know that? I guess the other question is this a guy you want to be president? If one, he can't even have his own taxes done and pay the right amount, and two, doesn't know how to use one of the biggest loopholes companies have been using for almost a generation. Thoughts? Because I look at this and I go, well, the tax plan, this 20% across the board thing, the territorial tax that he's talking about, that's going to harm the 47% and even more. And understand, let's say you're in that 47.1% to 60, 65%. Congratulations, you're going to end up down at the bottom because more jobs will leave because of the territorial tax. Numerous experts have already said that's the case. And more will go to the top because we're not taxing that money as we should. Now, they keep saying, well, you know, it's sitting over there. We could use that for job creation. But the last time we allowed them to bring it back without paying a proper tax, did it benefit us? No, it actually harmed us. We lost, I think it was like 150,000, 200,000 jobs. And we lost tax revenue because all they did was buy back their shares, pump up the price of their stock, and, of course, take huge windfall because of it. Does that make sense to you? Because it doesn't make sense to me. So for all of this rhetoric, all of this back and forth on every issue, this waffling, whatever, flip-flopping, whatever you want to call it, for it before he was against it, whatever, you got to look at this guy and go, is he truly having the conversion that he wants us to believe and he's seen the way? Or, or is he lying? And I'm going to go with, quite possibly, I'm going to go with the lying. It, to me, is that simple. Because you look at the policies that the right has pushed in this country, you look at the direction that they want to take this country back to, it's exactly what got us into this trouble. And if you look at the Social Security system that they keep talking about that they want, privatized, remember during the Bush years, Bush was running around with the filing cabinets, telling everybody that Social Security was nothing but a bunch of IOUs. I've seen it, just IOUs, tons of them. Never mind that the IOUs are backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. Never mind that. They're backed by you and me, and most of it has been put to use, A, building some roads and bridges and being invested, but a good portion of it, well, was squandered by people like Reagan, people like George H.W. Bush, because they used it as their little cookie jar. Couldn't keep their hands out of it because it made their deficits look smaller. That's the reality. Sad stuff. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the Social Security, going to be talking about the Walmart action that's going on. Going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK. Quick break. Right back after this. We're going to talk about Social Security. Stick around.
Rick Smith Show. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. For workers at the Bainport Tent Camp outside the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, watching Mitt Romney in the first presidential debate claim he will create jobs was a bitter pill to swallow. Romney's Bain Capital is shipping their jobs to China in November, and Romney is making money off of destroying those jobs. The workers have called on Romney to come talk with them to help save their jobs, but he's ignoring them. Here is Insada workers Dot Turner, Bonnie Borman, and Tom Gallrap speaking in a video about Romney's Bain Capital destroying their jobs.
Last year, Bain Capital bought our company, and we found out that our jobs were going overseas.
When they told us that our jobs would be going to China, when you first hear that, at first it's like it's unbelievable, like you don't believe what you're hearing.
Bain sent over workers from China to learn our jobs so that they could replace us.
And it wasn't that they were losing money. It's just that they wanted to make more money.
This guy is talking about job creation, and yet the company that not only that he founded, but that he's actually making money off of, is doing that to us.
There's something new at Walmart, striking workers, Jesse Russell reports.
Thursday saw workers at Walmart stores in Southern California walk off the job to protest what they say are repeated attempts by the company to retaliate against employees who attempt to organize. The question is open as to whether or not Walmart will terminate those employees who walked off the job yesterday. Non-union workers are protected by federal law if they can prove that they went on strike to protest unfair labor practices. The strike at Walmart stores comes only 2 days after striking workers at a Walmart distribution warehouse in Elwood, Illinois, shut down that facility. That strike has been ongoing since mid-September. Those workers, also non-union, say they're protesting unsafe working conditions, low wages, and alleged sexual harassment. Efforts to organize Walmart workers have often led to the chain taking drastic measures. When meat cutters in Jacksonville, Texas, successfully organized in 2000, the company shut down in-store meat cutting at that location. A Walmart store in Quebec also successfully organized, but the company soon after closed that store. The company alleged the store didn't fit Walmart's business plan, but the Quebec Labor Board later found that the store was closed as a reprisal toward the workers for organizing.
More than 100,000 supporters of striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois have signed a letter demanding an end to Walmart's retaliation against those workers and improved conditions at the warehouse in Elwood, Illinois. Over 600 people rallied earlier this week and took arrests to shut down that warehouse while demanding justice for the striking workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
But the fact
Vice
is...
Vice President Cheney, though, said it's not a Ponzi scheme.
Here,
you say it is.
Absolutely. If Vice President Cheney or anyone else says that the program that we have in place today and young people who are paying into that expect that program to be sound and for them to receive benefits when they reach retirement age, that is just a lie. And I don't care what anyone says. We know that. The American people know that. But more importantly, those 25 and 30-year-olds know that.
He doesn't care. Facts be damned, he doesn't care. He knows beyond exception and doesn't care. Facts be damned. The reality is Social Security's not broke, but they keep pushing that frame. And you know how many times I've heard from, you know, people in their 20s and 30s that, I'll see a UFO before I see a Social Security check. Because they keep hearing people like Rick Perry. They keep hearing people like Prescott Bush, the kid that people think are going to be the next rising star, the third generation of Bush presidents potentially. Oh, please help us. But the reality is Social Security is pretty good shape and has done exactly what it was supposed to do. It's pretty much eradicated poverty for seniors. You look at this recession, seniors would have been devastated in this recession. Social Security didn't allow that to happen. But you look at the debate the other day, and I agree with Bernie Sanders. When the president says something like that he expects that his position is somewhat similar to Romney's, it is very distressing, which is why I've got Adam Swope. He's a field organizer for the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans. PennRetiredAmericans.org, the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Adam, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So is it a Ponzi scheme?
No, it's not a Ponzi scheme. I was listening to your comments just now. I hear the same thing from people my age. I'm 33 years old, and I hear that same kind of stuff from people my age all the time. My answer to them is usually if If you and I don't have Social Security when we turn 65, then shame on us, because we'll have voted for representatives that vote to take it away.
Excellent point. Excellent point. You know, but you listen to them, and you know, the frame is out there. You know, it's in Mitt Romney's book, No Apology. He said that Social Security was out of control, and it was a terrible burden for future generations and a fraud. And he and his cohort, Ayn Ryan, they have backed privatization schemes. Is it a terrible burden? Is it out of control?
It certainly isn't, and I'm glad you brought up Governor Romney's book. I think, you know, when I was listening to the president debate Romney last night, it seemed like the president gave Romney sort of a lot of credit where credit wasn't due on Social Security. You know, he has been a vocal proponent of individual retirement accounts, the same, you know, Bush-style scheme that was, you know, incredibly unpopular even among Republicans back in 2005, that a lot of us fought really hard to defeat. Mitt Romney's been a supporter of this for a very long time, and he put a running mate on his ticket who is just as supportive, if not more supportive, of that idea. So the president, I think, was mistaken that he and Mitt Romney hold similar positions on Social Security.
Yeah, because I got to tell you, I'm as Bernie Sanders pointed out, I'm distressed if that's the case. If his view is the same as Mitt Romney's, we got problems.
Even if you go to Mitt Romney's own website today, if you go to the Social Security position page, it talks about raising the retirement age, which is not something I think the president's been out there on. I know it was part of Simpson Bowles and the president has said that was a framework to start from, but I don't think the president has been out there saying, yes, we need to raise the retirement age. But Mitt Romney certainly has and still is.
So the question then becomes is, you know, because the parties have a lot to do with this as well. And you look at the party platforms, they couldn't be more different.
Right. I mean, certainly we're not a partisan organization, but When you look at the two platforms, they're very different, and it kind of makes sense. You have one party that hates the government, the other party doesn't hate the government. We're talking about a government program here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not that surprising they have very different views on it.
Yeah, and the reality is as the president said, if you're 54 or 55, you might want to listen not just to Medicare, but to what they want to do for Social Security as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Medicare's certainly been the hotter topic recently, but if you look at the Ryan plan especially, and I think, you know, Romney has done a good job, at least in that debate, of sort of distancing himself from the Ryan budget. And, you know, if I were the president, I probably would have brought it up several times. But Congressman Ryan's two budgets, as well as his roadmap or pathway to prosperity or whatever it was, the Ryan roadmap before he became budget chairman, you know, talked about all these negative ideas for Social Security. And one of them was this fast track he wanted to put it on for cuts. The Ryan roadmap called for massive cuts to Social Security any year it wasn't 75 years solvent, which it isn't now, where the Social Security trustees would have to issue recommendations to Congress that could not include revenue increase. They could only include benefit cuts, and Congress would have to vote them up or down whenever this trigger came into place. And he put the trigger so far that it would always come into play pretty much. And that's, you know, sort of a way that they could set up Social Security for cuts without having to run on any specific cuts. We all know that Governor Romney doesn't like to run on specifics, and this area is no different. But that's, you know, there are so many radical plans out there that Mitt Romney has tied himself to, with the support of the Ryan budgets and with the support of Paul Ryan himself. And the president, I wish, would have called him on it.
Yeah, I do too. But you mentioned a moment ago, shame on us. If cuts happen, if they raise the retirement age, if they weaken this program or privatize it in any way. And, you know, you look at this, and I think you're absolutely right. We need to be voting on strengthening it, not destroying it, making sure that the retirement age stays right where it is and the benefits stay right where they are. But we do need to think about long term. And, you know, your group, the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans, what's the solution to the problem long term? What are you guys advocating for?
Well, we certainly think the best way to address the problem is by addressing the cap on taxable earnings, to make sure that Americans come closer to paying the same rate in Social Security taxes. Because, you know, I will pay a payroll tax on every dollar I ever earn for the rest of my life, most likely, because I doubt I'm ever going to be making more than $110,000 in a single year. But there are a lot of Americans who make more than that. They stop paying that at $110,000. I'm not sure if every American realizes that tax isn't paid on every dollar that everyone earns, like Medicare is. Medicare, the Medicare tax doesn't have a cap on it. That cap was originally created to capture around 90% of wages in the country. Today it only captures like 83%. This is because the growing disparity between CEO pay and workers pay, that cap is capturing less and less percentage of total earnings in this country. If we raised it back up to where it was around 90,000, I think the number would be 158,000 instead of 110. That would pretty much take care of the solvency problem. Those individuals that would be paying a little bit more, they would actually still get higher benefits because you put more in, you get more out. But of course, at the top end of the scale, there's diminishing returns on that. So that's why it would still help the solvency of the system. And that's a way we can help solvency without cutting benefits for retirees, without cutting benefits for future retirees, without raising taxes on the middle class. And help the solvency problem. I think it's also important for people to understand, when we talk about Social Security, it keeps getting lumped into these budget discussions and lumped into these deficit discussions. But Social Security isn't coming in and out of the Treasury. Social Security isn't part of this deficit discussion. So, whenever I'm talking to a group of seniors about Social Security, we talk about this issue and we talk about the solvency issue, but I always try to make the point that this is separate from the deficit. If Social Security ran out of money in 2036, That doesn't mean it would cease to exist in 2037. People would still be paying in. People would still be collecting. They wouldn't get as much as they ought to because of the trust fund not being there. But the program wouldn't stop existing, which is what I have to explain to people my age again about shame on us if we take it away. Because even if the trust fund goes away and even if we don't solve that problem, Social Security will continue to operate. It'll just operate at a lower level. And at that point in time, Social Security can't add to the deficit.
And those are two very important points. One, it doesn't add to the deficit. It shouldn't be part of the talks. And also that it doesn't go broke. I mean, it isn't completely out of money like you keep hearing the right saying, or the people who want to destroy Social Security. Well, it's going to go broke, so we should kill it now is, I guess, the idea.
Yeah, like I said, in 2037, if we have no trust fund, there will still be workers in America paying their Social Security taxes. Social Security will continue to issue checks to senior citizens. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. I mean, we built up the trust fund for a reason. Even the idea that we're going to pay it down isn't an indicator of a crisis situation. When they raised the tax in 1983, when they raised the retirement age in 1983, they did that to anticipate the baby boomer retirement. They said we need to do this now. So we built up this giant trust fund for the baby boomer retirement. It'll be $3 trillion by the time it's done building up in around 2020. It's okay that we're going to pay it down. That's what it's there for. I mean, I think the other thing that's interesting about Social Security that most people don't know, as everyone keeps saying, it's bankrupt. Social Security ran a surplus last year. 2011, 2010, it ran a surplus. 2009, it ran a surplus. 2008, it ran a surplus. Even when the country was in economic freefall, Social Security's trust fund grew. It didn't shrink. And that's certainly not a program I would consider bankrupt. If I were a business and I took in billions more dollars than I put out, I wouldn't call my business bankrupt.
No, I absolutely agree. And the other question I have, because you brought up the change there in 83, which I like to call the cookie jar that Reagan liked to steal from. Had we the money that they took from Social Security all those years during the Reagan years to make sure that people didn't see the huge deficits they were running, and really through all of the presidency they dip into that to make the deficits not look so large. Had that money been accounted for, and I don't know if you saw the clips last year of Alan Simpson saying, it's all gone, it's all used, it's all done away with, and it's not going back. Had we that money, would we be having this conversation?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinformation going back and forth from both sides about that issue. I mean, Social Security, they had been counting Social Security expenditures and Social Security income as part of the federal government's overall income and expenditures, just to make the deficit look smaller, like you say. But since the 70s, it's been law that when Social Security runs a surplus, it invests that money in treasury bonds, which makes sense because, when you think about it, it's the best of both worlds. We don't necessarily want cash sitting around doing nothing. We also don't want cash. We don't also want it invested on Wall Street where tomorrow it could poof be gone. But, what we did do with it was we put Social Security into Treasury bonds, which is the safest way to invest money. When all those Wall Street tycoons were losing money in the stock market in 2008, what'd they do? They all ran out and bought Treasuries. That's the safe thing to do with money. Last year, Social Security earned $118 billion in interest on the bonds that it owns. So when someone accuses, the Congress of raiding the trust fund. Well, first, you know, Congress hasn't voted to do anything about the trust fund since the 70s when they voted to make it law that Social Security invests its money in Treasury bonds. But if Social Security did have just cash sitting around in an account instead of Treasury bonds, it wouldn't have earned those $118 billion last year. So I think that's actually the safest way for Social Security to operate. You know, I don't buy into this scare tactic that a Treasury bond is a worthless IOU. You know, if a Treasury bond is worthless, then so is the money in my pocket, and we have way bigger problems than Social Security. If the full faith and credit of the United States government is all of a sudden worthless.
Yeah. You know,
That's my take on the trust fund.
All right. Last line of questioning I got for you. Last night we talked with Daniel Marins from the Social Security Works Group, and we were talking about, you know, he was saying that, you know, this is a retirement system and all this. And I have this view that it was set up as anti-poverty insurance. This was the line in the sand where we as a society said, you know what, no one's going to fall below this. We're not going to have people seniors living in the street. They're not going to be eating cat food. We're going to make sure that they have a certain standard of living. And I think that there should be a national retirement system, something kind of like California just tried to start doing with low-wage workers so that you have a pension that you can pay into. But, you know, in looking at this, how do you see the Social Security system? Is it a retirement plan, or is it the line in the sand?
I think you're right when you call it insurance. I think Social Security is insurance against loss of income, because let's remember, you know, there are disabled people on Social Security. There are children who receive Social Security because their parents may have died or their parents can no longer work. You know, in any situation where an American finds themselves unable to earn money anymore because they're too old to have their job, or because they're disabled, or because they're a child and they don't have a provider, Social Security kicks in. So it's a social insurance program that insures you against loss of income, and that means the payroll tax we pay is actually more of a premium than a tax. You know, so I don't buy into the whole Ponzi scheme analogy where you know I'm paying, you know, for someone else. I'm paying an insurance premium, and you know, maybe that'll pay off big for me if I live to 98 years old. You know, maybe I'll live to 50 and I won't get anything. That's the way insurance works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think you're absolutely right about drawing a line in the sand. You know, people my age, they've heard the word poorhouse. I'm not sure a lot of young people realize that was actually a real thing, that it was a real concern for seniors that they might end up there, especially women whose husbands were the breadwinner, and before Social Security, if the husband died and the pension wasn't there, they ended up in the poorhouse. And you know, that's sort of become part of old timey talk for these days. But that was a real thing, and Social Security, you know, is a great example of the government and the people of America getting together and saying, this is a problem, let's solve it. Social Security solved it 100%. There's no such thing as a poorhouse anymore.
Yeah, and there are no such thing as debtor prisons either.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah. Adam Swope, I appreciate the time. Field organizer for the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans, PennRetiredAmericans.org, the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Adam, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education, we're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st-century infrastructure, we're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all, we're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for this free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to TheRickSmithShow.com.
Ah, Timmy boy, we hardly knew ye. Tim Pawlenty, that is, the rather moderate former governor of Minnesota. He had made a radical change in his political persona last year, deliberately yanking his views and rhetoric to the far right in the vain hope that he might become this year's GOP presidential nominee. But he didn't catch on with the party's red meat right-wingers, so Pawlenty was out before most Americans even knew he was in. After losing, he double-clutched and shifted again, becoming co-chair of Mitt Romney's campaign, a guy he had dissed as not a real conservative during the spring primaries. But being a Mitt bobblehead was a nothing position. Once again, then, Pawlenty departed before anyone knew he was there, or who he is. So, no doubt, you and other inquiring minds are dying to know where the ever-shifting what's-his-name has shifted to now. I can help you with that. Tim has gone deeper into the political darkness where even fewer people will see him. He's the new top lobbyist in Washington for Wall Street. Pawlenty will head up the powerful but obscure Financial Services Roundtable. And, once again, he had to shift his views dramatically to get there. Only last year, he was blasting the giant banks for their massive government bailouts and insider deals. He demanded that they get their snout out of the trough. And now, he's the snout-in-chief, in charge of filling the trough with special goodies for the Wall Street powers. Asked about the irony, or dare we say hypocrisy, of this rebuker of Wall Street becoming his primary Washington defender, the roundtable's former chief simply quoted an old Inside the Beltway axiom, "Where you stand depends on where you sit." This is Jim Hightower saying, "So at long last, we know who Tim is. The poster boy of Washington's ethic of flexibility." Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Mr. President, do you see a major difference between the two of you on Social Security?
You know, I suspect that on Social Security we've got a somewhat similar position. Social Security is structurally sound. It's going to have to be tweaked the way it was by Ronald Reagan and Democratic Speaker Tip O'Neill. But it is, the basic structure is sound.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So Phil Gingrey, Republican from Georgia, representative there, one of the Romney surrogates. He was doing CNN this morning and, you know, had some real interesting statements, which, you know, you go on this 47% comment that Romney threw out there and now says that he was completely wrong, had this grand epiphany, evidently. He now cares about poor people. Who knew? And I'll bet you he gives a quarter to the guy on the quarter with the cup. I'll bet you maybe once. But Gingrey had an interesting statement. He said, you know, the Republican, the conservative candidate in the primary, is always going to lean right and come back to the center for the general. He said, that's all you're seeing here. It's very typical. We strong conservatives understand that. There's a lot of undecideds in this country, and we want those votes, too. So this is a campaign strategy. And, you know, the woman who... You know, who's interviewing him going, well, that's lying, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you're lying, is that not a problem? I mean, when you're talking about we're going to have a $5 trillion tax cut plan that we're not going to pay for and most of it's going to go to the top, you know, top 10%, and you come on stage and you lie and say that's not your plan, I mean, is that a strategy or is it lying? I mean, do you lose credibility? I mean, you know, being the guy who, think about this for a second, being the guy who passed RomneyCare, then you run on a platform of repealing it, and then you say, oh, well, you know, I embrace portions of it. you know, at what point do you go, liar? I don't know. You look at the Dodd-Frank, who he says, well, it hurts, and it creates these too big to fail banks, and... what did he say? It's the biggest kiss that's been given to New York banks or something like that? Dodd-Frank. Which is really, you know, and look, I agree that it's not Glass-Steagall, but it's a step towards some type of sanity. It's better than the Wild West. It's better than where we are right now. But, you know, hey, you know, facts be damned. And then you go, well, what about the oil companies? Well, get to that. Now he's considering eliminating them. I mean, is there anything that he's firm on? Because if you go back to his time as governor, he was a pro-life governor. Had a grand epiphany. And look, you can have that. Do I believe him? No. I think he's a businessman. It's all about the sale. What we're seeing is a sales pitch. And Romney's the used car salesman. He's the guy who's got the lemon. And he's going to say, he's going to do, he's going to pitch, he's going to, you know, he's going to tell you whatever it is to get you in that lemon. And what's going to happen, you're going to get that lemon down the road, and boy, are you in trouble. And as a nation, can we get back in that lemon again? Which, you look at the Bush years, what he is proposing with his tax plan is what Bush did, only twice as much. So yeah, the middle class may get a little bit of something. Yeah, get a couple of pennies. But in the end, we're the ones who get screwed through lower wages, the ones who get screwed through shifting budgets and lower opportunities for our kids, less investment in infrastructure, less investment in education, health care, all of that stuff. Now, on October 16th, there's going to be another debate, and I got to be honest, I'm hoping the Obama that showed up the day after the debate there to give a speech, I hope that guy shows up to Hofstra University. And they're going to be talking about foreign policy, which I think Romney's at a really a major disadvantage. If you consider the foreign policy disaster tour he took over the summer, you know, where you go into London and you insult our biggest ally. And then you go and you meet with MI6 and I issue a press release. You know, the secret MI6. Or you're going to go up against Obama, the guy who gave the order to go into Pakistan and kill bin Laden. I mean, where are you going to be on that? Now, they're going to try and go after him on Libya. And you know what the reality is in all of these embassies, you have threats constantly. And you've got requests for this stuff constantly. But this is not what the right is trying to show us. I mean, this is, and this Truman National Security Project, they just released a new ad. And you got a lot of military people who are saying, you know, Romney's not the guy. This is a guy who has confused his policy on Afghanistan. This is a guy who's really taken a very bizarre right-wing hawk, neocon position on Iran. And they're going, you know, we don't want this guy. So they're running this ad all around the country.
This is Mitt Romney grasping after straws.
Mitt Romney today didn't really have anything to say about Syria.
He gave very little detail on how he would change U.S. foreign policy.
I was at Wawa's. I wanted to order a sandwich.
This is Mitt Romney grasping after straws.
Mitt Romney today didn't really have anything to say about Syria.
He gave very little detail on how he would change U.S. foreign policy.
His remarks about Afghanistan have been utterly confusing.
Because you didn't mention U.S. troops and the war in Afghanistan in your nomination acceptance speech.
When you give a speech, you don't go through a laundry list. You talk about the things that you think are important.
Are you saying the troops aren't important to you?
Our national security is not important.
There's nothing.
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 More important to me
than our country safe.
I served as a corporal.
I was a captain,
infantry officer,
captain
in the United States Army.
United States Marine Corps.
Do you have any idea how dangerous this world is?
You don't seem to have a plan, Mr. Romney. You've shown us from London to Libya that you're in over your head.
That's what scares me most.
For you, Mr. Romney, it's about politics.
For us, it's about defending our country.
Defending our freedom.
We deserve a commander-in-chief that understands what's at stake.
But to trust you as commander-in-chief?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
As a veteran, I don't think so.
The Truman National Security Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you look at it and you listen to it, what speeches has he given on the military? Anything on how to deal with unemployed veterans? Anything? No, not so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Ocean of Red. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education, we're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st century infrastructure, we're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all, we're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for this free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to TheRickSmithShow.com.
Earth, sky.
Today, Stanford University biologist Paul Ehrlich. He's famous for his 1968 book, The Population Bomb. Like many before him, Ehrlich told Earth Sky that equal opportunities for women might be key to maintaining Earth's population at a reasonable level.
One of the things, for example, that we can do maybe to totally solve the population problem and get our population gradually shrinking is to give full rights to all women everywhere, make sure they have the same pay, all the same opportunities, and so on.
Ehrlich and other population experts point out that women with the same opportunities as men tend to have fewer children. That's already happened in many places on Earth. In 2003, for the first time in human history, more than half the women in the world lived in places where the rate of reproduction was below the replacement level. That is, those women were having fewer children than the number required to replace themselves in the next generation. That's what equal opportunities for women seems to do, and it's important according to Paul Ehrlich.
The best estimates we can make are that with present technologies, you might be able to support 1.5 billion people permanently on the planet, and we are 7 now, and we're going to add, if the projections are correct, 2.5 billion people by 2050.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
They discriminate by race and hate. Won't pay nobody living wage. One more's here, let's all rejoice. Everyone is gone and we got no choice. So no more. Kill the cowards for soul.
And most of Main Street along with it. Sad, sad stuff. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So yesterday we talked about what went on out in Los Angeles as workers for Walmart took to the picket line. We had some technical problems, couldn't get through to the worker out there. A guy who's honestly making just over $9 an hour, right around $8,000 a year. How do you make an existence? How do you eke out an existence on $8,000 a year? You know, I would assume he's one of the 47% that Mitt Romney keeps talking about. You know, those lazy and shiftless people who he's now embraced, think he thought he was wrong. Now he loves. I don't buy it. Anyway, I've got Evan Yates. He is the campaign communications coordinator for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I got him on the line. They're working on this campaign out there in Los Angeles. Evan, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. It's always great to be back here and sitting around with some like-minded folks who are in Pennsylvania right now.
I look at this, and you know, this is the kind of stuff we're going to have to see, and I'm hoping to see more of in the coming weeks, months, and years, because someone's got to take down this evil empire.
well, Rick, you know, I think these workers are not necessarily trying to take down an evil empire, but you know, they want a good place to work, a good community that grows up around the place they work and want to be able to support their families. And they think that America's largest retailer and one of America's biggest corporations should support them in that effort.
And, you know, I absolutely agree. And the reality is, you know, I think most of us, we hear the stories, we hear about the wage theft, we hear about the low wages, we hear about the fact that most of the workers have to get their health care from state government, most of the folks are getting some type of government assistance. You know, the exact people that Mitt Romney's talking about, those 47%, those working people who don't make enough money to pay federal tax. And I say, you know what, in this country, if you go to work, you punch the clock and you work your behind off, you shouldn't have to ask for help. Your wages should pay that.
You're absolutely right, Rick, and I think that's what everybody who was on the picket line out in Pico Rivera, California, wants. You know, they want a job that can let them support themselves and their families, and they want to be able to speak out for a better workplace. You know, and that's what it's really all about. I think one of the most compelling things is if your listeners want to go on YouTube and there's a R Walmart, which is the organization of Walmart Associates that was involved in this strike effort in Pico Rivera, put together a video with a woman named Kate Lally, who's a worker at Walmart in Arkansas, you know, Walmart's home state, who is a Republican, who supported Mitt Romney, but who is trying as hard as she can to make ends meet, is just failing, is not getting paid enough money to do it. And, you know, that 40% comment was what pushed her over the edge, which said, you know what, I can't abide this anymore. And, you know, it's a problem across America. So I just check out that video. It's incredibly powerful, and I encourage everybody to go take a look.
We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com so people can take a look at it there. You know, but, you know, here's the thing. You know, when I read the report from Walmart, read the press release Walmart put out, it's just a handful, it's nothing. The very minimalist approach. This was a pretty sizable picket you guys had.
Yeah, so let me tell you. 50% of the first shift in that Walmart walked off the job. You know, you can't run a store on 50%. You know, Walmart has certainly already tried with the number of staff cutbacks they've had. But, and all in all, there were dozens of workers from 10 Walmarts across Southern California who walked off the job, and hundreds of supporters, right there in Southern California, and thousands more across the country who followed the action and stood with them. And it's really heartening to see. I mean, this strike has been a long time coming. Our Walmart was founded a little bit over a year ago. It's the Organization United for Respect at Walmart. It's a group of Walmart associates who are standing up together, who are trying to make real change, to change Walmart for the better. And you know what? They've been speaking out, and they've been trying to talk to Walmart. They say, you know, these are the things that need to change in our workplace. This is what needs to be made better to make Walmart a good place to work. And Walmart has responded with retaliation, with intimidation, with harassment. And what these workers have done is they have gone out and said, you know what, that's enough. We're done with this. You know, we have basic rights as Americans, and that's to speak out, and that's to stand for change, and that's to stand as a group. And that's what this strike was all really about. It was about the ability to speak out for change and those basic fundamental human rights that every American, every citizen has.
Yeah, and fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions. The reasons people join and form unions and they collectively bargain. And here's the thing. This is not like this is a poor company. The Walmart family, and this just blows my mind. You have one family in this country who controls as much worth as almost 42% of the American people. I mean, stop and think about it. You're talking about a handful of people.
Rick, you're right, and the new Forbes numbers just came out not that long ago, so I think that statistic may be even going down. You know, there were six members of the Walton family on the Forbes 400 this year. Collectively, they're worth more than $100 billion. That's right. You know, you're dwarfing the Bill Gates of the Warren Buffetts, and it's all collectively the wealth of the one family. And the one in particular that I always think of is Rob Walton, you know. He's the chairman of Walmart stores, but he didn't build the company. It's all inherited wealth. The man is worth more than $20 billion himself. He owns a custom, well, there's been a report that he owns a custom gold Ferrari. this is a gentleman who, despite all that, has led a company that pushes down the standards for workers across the country. and, you know, done it all. Well, even though he's so rich, he still takes a salary from Walmart as chairman of the board. You know, $220,000 a year, an extra cut to make sure that he's making a little more money.
Well, I mean, it's hard work. I mean, honestly and truthfully, I got to tell you, it's hard work being him because, you know, it's difficult to break the dreams and hopes of the American working people. I mean, it's a lot of work. You got to wake up every day and you got to think of, you know, how am I going to suppress this? How am I going to make sure that I get wealthier off of their work? And, you know,
well, you know what? It's such hard work, Rich. I don't think you or I could ever manage to do it.
I couldn't. But, you know, I look at, you know, Mitt Romney was at an event with Papa John's at Papa John's Palatial Estate. And if you've seen pictures of this place, it is amazing. And you go, that all was purchased off the backs of hardworking people who are in that 47%. Those drivers, those people who make the pizza, all of those, all along the supply chain there, those are people who Romney said didn't care about. Part of the 47% who don't make enough money to pay federal income tax.
And part of to remember is where they also reinvest that money. You know, these folks like the Walton family then take that money and put it into the conservative political causes that are, you know, going after public workers, teachers, and all the public servants that we hold so valued across the country. And it's just thinking about where the money goes, every dollar that gets spent at Walmart, you know?
So let me ask you this, Evan. You know, going from you had the strike yesterday, the big event, you had all of this really great organizing. Where do you go from tomorrow? Where do you go the day after? Where does this lead us?
It's tremendous. It's been building for a year, Rick. Even just last week, the strike wasn't it. You know, there was a delegation of Walmart workers who went to New York City who sat down with industry analysts from some of the largest banks and trading houses in the world and said, you know, what the spin that the company's putting on their performance is not true. This is the reality of ground floor operations to break through the Walmart spin. You know, workers went back to work today, but they were escorted by a group of workers from, you know, more than a half a dozen countries. Walmart workers from around the world met in Los Angeles today to stand together and say all Walmart workers deserve the right to have a union. Because, you know, in about six countries, Walmart workers do have unions. It's only here in America that they've really they've stood up and said, you know, you can't have a living wage. You can't have a successful career as a Walmart worker. And then on from there, I think we're going to see a building movement because Walmart workers across the country are talking to each other more than ever. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. They're communicating. They're talking to each other. And this is something that I think is going to catch.
And you know, I hope so.
I don't think this is going to happen in one store in California, and that's going to be the end of it. So I encourage everybody to keep listening to Rick Smith and following their favorite news sources because I don't think this story's going to go away.
And that's the hope, and not just for Walmart workers, but for all workers across the globe, because for too long we've allowed the global wealth class to exploit and use all workers all across this country, pitting us against each other. And I always use the Jay Gould quote, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Pretty true.
You know, Rick, I got faith in the American worker and the American working family and ultimately in the American system. And that's why I'm in the line of work I'm in. And so I believe in real change, and I think that's going to happen soon.
I'm right there with you. I hope you're right, and I'm glad you're out there fighting for workers every day. Evan Yates, I appreciate the time. Campaign Communications Coordinator with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, UFCW. Evan, thanks so much.
No, thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
I would love to have you back in again real soon. Follow up. Let's take a quick break. Back with the second hour of the program. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. For workers at the Bainport Tent Camp outside the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, watching Mitt Romney in the first presidential debate claim he will create jobs was a bitter pill to swallow. Romney's Bain Capital is shipping their jobs to China in November, and Romney is making money off of destroying those jobs. The workers have called on Romney to come talk with them to help save their jobs, but he's ignoring them. Here are Sensata workers Dot Turner, Bonnie Borman, and Tom Galrap speaking in a video about Romney's Bain Capital destroying their jobs.
Last year, Bain Capital bought our company, and we found out that our jobs were going overseas.
When they told us that our jobs would be going to China, when you first hear that, at first it's like it's unbelievable, like you don't believe what you're hearing.
Bain sent over workers from China to learn our jobs so that they could replace us.
And it wasn't that they were losing money. It's just that they wanted to make more money.
This guy is talking about job creation, and yet the company that not only that he founded, but that he's actually making money off of, is doing that to us.
There's something new at Walmart striking workers. Jesse Russell reports.
Thursday, workers at Walmart stores in Southern California walk off the job to protest what they say are repeated attempts by the company to retaliate against employees who attempt to organize. The question is open as to whether or not Walmart will terminate those employees who walked off the job yesterday. Non-union workers are protected by federal law if they can prove that they went on strike to protest unfair labor practices. The strike at Walmart stores comes only 2 days after striking workers at a Walmart distribution warehouse in Elwood, Illinois, shut down that facility. That strike has been ongoing since mid-September. Those workers, also non-union, say they're protesting unsafe working conditions, low wages, and alleged sexual harassment. Efforts to organize Walmart workers have often led to the chain taking drastic measures. When meat cutters in Jacksonville, Texas, successfully organized in 2000, the company shut down in-store meat cutting at that location. A Walmart store in Quebec also successfully organized, but the company soon after closed that store. The company alleged the store didn't fit Walmart's business plan, but the Quebec Labor Board later found that the store was closed as a reprisal toward the workers for organizing.
More than 100,000 supporters of striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois have signed a letter demanding an end to Walmart's retaliation against those workers and improved conditions at the warehouse in Elwood, Illinois. Over 600 people rallied earlier this week and took arrests to shut down that warehouse while demanding justice for the striking workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I gotta listen to man. Written on the palm of my hand. I'm all my sister, you got no right hand. Feeling an anthem, thoughts, you wanna be somebody. See somebody, try to free somebody. Gotta listen to man. Written on the palm of my hand. I'm all my sister, you got no right hand.
Back to the second hour of the Rick Smith Show. This hour we're going to be talking about the job numbers, the right-wing reaction. It's a conspiracy! It's a conspiracy! And also we're going to talk about We're Not Broke, the movie, Saturday night in Carlisle, 6 p.m., the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters. We're going to be talking about why we're not broke, why we can invest, and why we have to invest. What's going to happen to this country if we continue to allow it to crumble and we continue to allow this austerity to be rammed down our throats? So we hope folks will come out to the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters there on Lowther Street Saturday night at 6 p.m. Today in labor history, 1945, a strike by set decorators turned into a bloody riot at the gates of Warner Brothers Studios in Burbank, California, when they had scabs trying to cross the picket line. The incident, to this day, still called Hollywood Black Friday and the Battle of Burbank. Also today, in 2004, 2,100 supermarket janitors in California, most of them from Mexico, they won $22.4 million because they weren't paid overtime. They were cheated out of wages. Many of the workers said that they had worked 70 hours a week or more, seven nights a week, for years. The one guy that the New York Times quoted said he had had 3 days off in 5 years. This is why we need to have strong labor unions. This is why we need to have strong worker organizations. This is why we need to make sure that every working person in this country has a shot. Anyway, I've got Gerardo Reyes on the line. He's with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Geraldo, I appreciate the time.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you tell me what's going on down there? What's going on with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers right now?
We just reached an agreement with Chipotle. It was yesterday we went to sign to make it official. And it was an amazing moment. We have been struggling to bring corporations to take responsibility by working with us in implementing a code of conduct that was created by the coalition to address inhumane treatment in the fields of tomatoes in the state of Florida, and also to pay a little bit more to address the sub-poverty wages that have been stagnant for workers for more than 30 years now.
How long did it take for you to get to this agreement?
It took about 6 years since Chipotle was first approached by some of us and then by other people that started to also organize with us, people that were from the past supporting the efforts since we first started. So in total, 6 years. But we have the agreement now, and we are looking forward to work with them in implementing what the agreement entails.
What kind of jobs do your members do? What kind of work do you guys do?
I'll describe a little bit of where we come from, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So that people have an idea. Immokalee is one of the poorest towns in the United States. Definitely one of the poorest in Florida. And in Immokalee, there are workers that come from Mexico, Guatemala, Haiti, and principally from these countries. And we are struggling to improve the conditions in the agricultural industry in general. So we fight abuses everywhere in the agricultural industry. Our main focus, though, is in the tomato industry because it's one of the most important industries that there is. Florida, as a state, produces 90% of the fresh tomatoes that are produced in the United States. During the months of from October to May. During the rest of the year, we go up north to work with the same companies, which have land all over the East Coast. The conditions have been pretty much the same. Abusive conditions, stagnant wages, just to give you an example. Today, we earn around 45 to 50 cents, depending on where you are working, for every 32-pound bucket of tomatoes, which means in a regular day, making the average of 10-hour day, you would have to pick 2.5 tons to be able to just make that minimum wage, which is $7.67, without any type of benefits or protections. That's the history, along with many other abuses.
Is that possible? I mean, is it possible to pick that many?
That question has been asked in different settings to the representatives of the agricultural industry that have not just said that workers are actually receiving minimum wage. They have said in the past that we made like double that, which was just an exaggeration of many things that have been said in the past. It is sometimes possible. If you are in a new field, that's going to be picked for the second time after you cut a few of the tomatoes that are ready, and then the plants start to produce to mature the tomatoes a little bit faster. They are picked when they are called mature green, which is still green in color, but not completely, still not turning orange or any color. It is possible sometimes, but when you are picking the same field for the second or the third time, by the third time you are not getting even enough to meet that minimum wage.
Wow.
If it rains, then you don't get anything that day. There are so many variables when you are doing this job that basically makes it impossible most of the time for you to make the minimum wage quote.
Now, this agreement that you guys have come to, is this going to give you a guarantee? Are you going to get – what kind of benefits are you going to get out of this agreement?
Well, this agreement, it's not the only one. It's the 11th agreement that we have. And with the other 10 agreements prior to the agreement with Chipotle, we were able to basically gather enough strength to be able to sit at the table and talk to the agricultural industry. They know that if they wanted to keep selling tomatoes to any of the 10 corporations that have signed, among them McDonald's, Burger King, Subway, Compass Group, Aramark, Sodexo, and some others, they needed to change their practices, and they needed to work with us, not just to say that they will treat workers better, but to actually do it by working with us, implementing what we call the Fair Food Program, which gives workers the right to have a system that accurately counts and pays the hours that you spend if you don't make enough working by this. But it also entails that all of these corporations would pay a penny and a half more for every pound of tomatoes they buy from Florida under a system that would make sure that this money travels through the payrolls of the companies and in the workers that pick that tomatoes. Until now, there's been $7 million that have been distributed through this Fair Food Program, and the rights of the workers when they complain are being respected. In the case of, for example, labor laws that were constantly stepped on, like the right to receive that minimum wage, it's realized through this program. In the case of, for example, cases of slavery, which is extreme, and we have seen seven of those, where over 1,200 workers were forced to work under these conditions of forced labor, where in some cases workers were threatened to be killed or their families. There were situations of beatings in the fields. There were situations where, in general, workers were not free to go. They were living in horrendous conditions. One of the cases involved workers that had to sleep inside a cargo truck. Sometimes they were chained, and they were beaten constantly in the fields or in the place where they were staying. And there was a padlock in the outside of this truck. They escaped and talked about their story, and that's how that case was resolved. And we have worked in seven cases in total that have been prosecuted. So you have to ask yourself, why is it that these cases continue to happen when there are laws in place, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, they do it because they can.
Huh?
They do it because they can. They do it because they can exploit people. They do it because they have the power to do it, because the labor laws in this country are fairly weak and the enforcement is weak.
Precisely. So my point in this is, with this Fair Food Program, we are not only talking about the work that we have been doing, which is bringing these cases to light, bringing them to court, and prosecute them through the system that there is. But what it does in the past, in any case, the persons responsible directly by law are the immediate bosses, which are the contractors, the couriers that work for the company. And the companies have always said, you know what, this is not our problem, we didn't even know, yada, yada, yada. But when you ask them, why is it that you didn't know? It is because there is no system in place. So the Fair Food Program is the system that we were waiting for, a system that was created for the workers, and that requires the participation of the tomato growers, the buyers, but also the consumers at the end of the chain, to make sure that corporations follow through. The corporations put the pressure so that the companies that produce the tomatoes follow and honor the agreement, and the workers take part in making sure that all the rights that are that they are entitled to under this Fair Food Program are respected, and if they are not, then they are reporting these abuses and then this triggered an investigation through a third-party monitoring organization that was created specifically for that. So what I'm saying is, and if a company, if a tomato company refuses to allow an investigation in any given situation, then they are not part of the program. What that means is that market consequences will be implemented right away. Millions of dollars will be lost in business if they don't fix the problem. So it makes automatic the entire tomato industry responsible for the practices that have been existing where before they didn't have anything to do by law. So it realized the law and it establishes on top of it market consequences.
So how can folks like us, last question I've got for you, how can we help to make sure that these things stay in place? How can we make sure that the people who do this work are well compensated? What should the general public be doing?
We have right now agreements with two supermarkets, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's. And the last agreement that we reached, obviously, with Chipotle, brings a lot of conversation, important conversation around the issue of sustainability. Because now that one of the main corporations that is basically focusing a lot of energy in promoting that idea accepted to work with us because the public was asking for this, the conversation is very, the moment for this conversation is really important. And we should continue to include workers in that idea of sustainability. For people who want support, we are asking people to visit our website, which is www.ciw-online.org. And there you're going to find letters that you can print and bring to the managers of the supermarket that haven't signed agreements. You can, right now, for example, we are focusing on a supermarket of Kroger and the brands that belong to Ahold, which are Giant and Stop and Shop. And we're going to continue to put pressure on the supermarket industry because they need to also participate in this so that this become the standard in how business interact with labor practices.
Yep. Well, and we've got the Ahold, we've got their headquarters right here in our listening area. I suggest everyone go to the website. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Gerardo Ray as his name. It'll take you right there. You can print off those petitions. You put off those letters, take them right there. Gerardo, I appreciate the time. Congratulations. Keep up the fight.
Thank you very much. And we ask all the people who are listening to just talk about it, to take this issue at heart, because we're talking about the people who put the food on everyone's table, sometimes going hungry. And this is not okay. These abuses can be easily eliminated if we all, consumers and workers, work together to make sure that the corporations act in a responsible way when it comes to labor issues. Thank
you
very much.
Gerardo, thanks so much. A quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education, we're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st century infrastructure, we're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all, we're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for this free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to thericksmithshow.com.
Ah, Timmy boy, we hardly knew ye. Tim Pawlenty, that is, the rather moderate former governor of Minnesota. He had made a radical change in his political persona last year, deliberately yanking his views and rhetoric to the far right in the vain hope that he might become this year's GOP presidential nominee. But he didn't catch on with the party's red meat right-winger, so Pawlenty was out before most Americans even knew he was in. After losing, he double-clutched and shifted again, becoming co-chair of Mitt Romney's campaign, a guy he had dissed as not a real conservative during the spring primaries. But being a Mitt bobblehead was a nothing position. Once again, then, Pawlenty departed before anyone knew he was there, or who he is. So, no doubt, you and other inquiring minds are dying to know where the ever-shifting what's-his-name has shifted to now. I can help you with that. Tim has gone deeper into the political darkness, where even fewer people will see him. He's the new top lobbyist in Washington for Wall Street. Pawlenty will head up the powerful but obscure Financial Services Roundtable. And, once again, he had to shift his views dramatically to get there. Only last year, he was blasting the giant banks for their massive government bailouts and insider deals. He demanded that they get their snout out of the trough. And now, he's the snout-in-chief, in charge of filling the trough with special goodies for the Wall Street powers. Asked about the irony, or dare we say hypocrisy, of this rebuker of Wall Street becoming his primary Washington defender, the roundtable's former chief simply quoted an old Inside the Beltway axiom, "Where you stand depends on where you sit." This is Jim Hightower saying, "So at long last, we know who Tim is. The poster boy of Washington's ethic of flexibility."
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
So according to the latest numbers by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the economy created 114,000 jobs in September. The unemployment rate fell to 7.8%. The street had expected about 110,000 jobs to be created. 114, that was, you know, a little better. And that was really because the Republicans were on vacation. They weren't working as hard as they could to destroy those public sector jobs, because the public sector actually added 10,000 jobs. Not the 600,000 we've seen slashed over the last couple of years, thanks to the Republicans and their austerity. Like I said, they were on vacation. They were doing their campaigning stuff, so they're kind of out. Also, the July numbers were revised upward. 40,000 additional jobs were added. And August's numbers were also adjusted upward at 46,000, which helped bring that to 7.8. Some good news, though. I mean, you look at it, the labor force, it grew by, I think it was like 418,000 people. So, you know, you look at this, good stuff. The revision shows, you know, strong summer job growth. The public sector, like I said, finally stopped shedding jobs, and the hourly earnings ticked up just a little bit, but, you know, 7 cents, I think. But the reality is, at least it's up. I mean, at the end of the day, you go and you look at the last 30 years where things have stagnated, it's a tick up. But what I found interesting is, you know, the right then saw the numbers and they went ballistic. Oh, it's a conspiracy. Oh, it's, you know, they're lying. Jack Welch, you know, unbelievable job numbers. These Chicago guys, they'll do anything. Can't debate, so change numbers. And when I saw that, I said, you know, what Chicago guys are you talking about? You talking about those Chicago school economists, you know, like Milton Friedman and the who've made this trickle down policy? Are those the free market people? Are those the people you're talking about, Jack? Are you talking about the folks like you who, thanks to his divorce, you got to find out all of the perks that were handed to him? You want to talk about entitled? Oh my God. Entitled? We're going to, fresh flowers at his four company paid residences. Fresh flowers. For life. I mean, really? And the answer is yes, really. And you go down the list, I mean, you know, all of them. McCain was on board with going after it. Alan West was going after him. You know, just down the list, all the crazy right-wingers, all the crazy conspiracy theorists, all right there. But, you know, here again, when the truth is going against you, you got to make something up. You got to come up with an alternative reality, which I got to be honest, the right is masterful, absolutely masterful at doing. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, all right. Yeah, according to what I'm hearing, the truckers say the freight's moving at a good rate. Manufacturing's up. You know, we're gearing towards Christmas and the holidays along with Thanksgiving. Here in Charleston, even though it's a right-to-work state, we've got a $100 million cruise terminal they're building, and they've got it on the board. I think they broke ground on it. They're trying to deepen the port here. Of course, we've got Boeing. They're delivering their first plane to Air India today. We've got a major multi-million-dollar project on the Opera House downtown. They've ripped the roof off of it and expanding it. And they've got a multi-year project, a $1 billion project on the table that they're going to start up on. So, yeah, I'd say things are turning around. They have been turning around. That's why I think a lot of people are frustrated with the debate that every time this comes up, you know, somebody just can't point out the raw numbers. And I still say it needs to be a multimedia presentation to the point that, you know, I mean, it's really easy to find. All you got to go is PolitiFact or OMB or the stimulus, website, and you can see where the money's been going, and you can see what's going on. We've got road projects, subdivisions being built, et cetera. So, but what really bugs me, though, and I know you hate this, Rick, but what really bugs me, though, just remember something. When it comes to the law of supply and demand, I don't care how many jobs you create if you have completely open everything. If they create 2 million jobs and you wind up with 4 million people coming in to take them, you'll never catch up, you know, and that's another reason, you know, when it comes to economics, supply and demand, et cetera, that's why I continue to argue that you have to be able to control your access to the country, because you can't overload it, continue to overload it with labor and expect to ever create enough jobs.
Which is why I say, and we've gone through this before time and time again, I could solidarity across the globe, where you have to hold these big companies accountable wherever they go. And that's where we're going to end with that. I appreciate it. It's always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Have a good night, buddy.
You know, and look, you know, the reality is we need to be doing more of that. And he's on a certain line. He's right. You know, if you're creating 2 million, you got 4 million people, of course you're going to have a problem. But at the end of the day, it's about holding those at the top accountable. It is what it is. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
Today, Stanford University biologist Paul Ehrlich. He's famous for his 1968 book, The Population Bomb. Like many before him, Ehrlich told Earth Sky that equal opportunities for women might be key to maintaining Earth's population at a reasonable level.
One of the things, for example, that we can do maybe to totally solve the population problem and get our population gradually shrinking is to give full rights to all women everywhere. Make sure they have the same pay, all the same opportunities, and so on.
Ehrlich and other population experts point out that women with the same opportunities as men tend to have fewer children. That's already happened in many places on Earth. In 2003, for the first time in human history, more than half the women in the world lived in places where the rate of reproduction was below the replacement level. That is, those women were having fewer children than the number required to replace themselves in the next generation. That's what equal opportunities for women seems to do, and it's important according to Paul Ehrlich.
The best estimates we can make are that with present technologies, you might be able to support 1.5 billion people permanently on the planet, and we are 7 now, and we're going to add, if the projections are correct, 2.5 billion people by 2050.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Free enterprise has done more to lift people out of poverty, to help build a strong middle class, to help educate our kids, and to make our lives better than all the programs of government combined.
I got to be honest, I completely disagree with that statement. You think about all of the investment. The guy we talked to last night, the guy who owns Emeco, the people who made the Navy chair that the Chinese are now ripping off and undercutting them. It was government investment. It was, hey, we need this. They filled the demand. That created jobs. That created an industry. You think about the roads, the bridges. You think about all of the investment. Well, I guess deaf ears when you're talking about the right wing in this country. And anyway, Saturday night, we're going to be talking about, should we be investing in roads and bridges, education, healthcare, all of the things making this the 21st century nation that we know it should be? And I always use the Thomas Friedman quote, when he flew from Beijing to LAX, he said it was like coming from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. We've become the Flintstones. Something seriously wrong with that. The premise is, and we've been sold this line, and a lot of us had bought it, that we're broke. We're not broke. That's why Saturday night, 6 p.m., at the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters there in Carlisle on Lowther Street, we're going to be showing the movie We're Not Broke. This way we get together, we have the conversation, and we get out and we talk to our friends and neighbors. I've got Vicki Bruce. She's the director of We're Not Broke, the website, WeNotBrokeTheMovie.com. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Vicki's name. Vicki, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Hey. Glad to talk to you.
So tomorrow we're going to be screening this film because, I think this is an important piece of work you guys have put out, highlighting the fact that we're not broke. As much as the right says it, as much as John Boehner wants to keep repeating that, regurgitating it, it's not reality.
Well, and what you're doing, I really appreciate, because We're Not Broke is about corporations that don't pay their taxes and how it's really just burying us in debt. And obviously we don't have any corporate sponsorship. So, the screenings that we're doing, your grassroots screening, and we're doing them all over the country. We were actually in five countries in the last week. So, it has to be done like this. And I think when people see the film, it'll change them forever, and there are things that we can do to fix this. And so it's not about, lamenting, the the good times are gone forever. It's about getting up and doing something. So I really appreciate you having this screening, and I really hope that the audience appreciates and gets it out there and takes it from there.
Yeah, and that's what's going to have to happen, because we've got to push back against the corporate-controlled mainstream message, which is that we should have the money. The debt is so big that there's nothing we can do. And as you've pointed out, we've got corporations and the very wealthy, people like Mitt Romney, not paying their share of taxes. And I guess let me ask you, can you give us an example of one of the corporations, like the poster child, if you will, for corporate malfeasance?
Well, funny, because GE has been in the news all day today. But, you know, GE is one of the worst tax avoiders of all. They have something like 95 tax attorneys all day long. All they do is figure out how to cheat America. And, you know, when the IRS goes to try to figure out what they did, they hand them a 95,000-page tax return. And they say, okay, here you go, two IRS agents. And then IRS says, well, you did something wrong. And they say, okay, we'll pay a fine. And you never hear about it. So I would say GE is one of the worst, but it's been Jeffrey Immelt in the last, you know, decade, because this has really gotten out of control in the last decade. And it's because of the lobbying, you know, oh, we need this loophole, this loophole. Sometimes these corporations like GE and their 75 tax attorneys, 95 tax attorneys, will write legislation, walk it into a building in the Russell Building in D.C. and hand it to one of our elected leaders. It could be right or left on the Democrats or Republicans. They're all guilty of it, and put it right into the tax code.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I wish I could do that.
I wish I could, too. And, you know, we keep hearing this call, and you know, and I've already predicted you're going to hear it's going to happen. There'll be the tax reform bill of 2013, and it will look an awful lot like that horrible piece of legislation from 86 that, you know, lowered the top marginal rate, cut a couple of loopholes temporarily, raise the tax rates of folks on the bottom, cut out a bunch of things that you and I used to be able to deduct for ourselves, like credit card interests and all of that stuff, and also began taxing unemployment benefits. You want to talk about a slap in the face? There's a slap in the face. But I'm predicting you're going to see that kind of bill again.
Yeah, I don't put anything past what our Congress is, especially if it remains under Republican control. I mean, the things they tried to do are insane. That, you know, lowering taxes on corporations that are paying zero, well, we even do that. I mean, some of these corporations, not only do they pay zero, Verizon, FedEx pays 0.9%. Can you go lower than that? I mean, the whole, it's this mantra.
Sure.
That, you know, they're charging forward. Our tax rate's too high. It's full, you know, and it's like, I'm sorry, even, you know, a local establishment that has to pay 35% is really shouldering the burden. I don't want to say now we should drop tax rates for everybody, because our country's in debt. I want to pay my fair share of my documentary film salary. I don't care. I want to have a country that's not falling apart. And like you said, I mean, that was such a good analogy. It is. We are turning into a third world country. If you're in our nation's capital, you see homeless everywhere. I've seen homeless children and moms on the street begging. This is not America.
Yeah, at least not the America that I believe in, and not the one that I was raised to believe was exceptional nation.
Right, and where we took care of each other, where we had, you know, where public schools were great. Now we trash teachers. I mean, there were propaganda films that talk about that. While the corporations, like we show in our film, GE, Google, Facebook, they're all just, I mean, swirling this money up top where it can't even be put into the common good.
Yeah,
and it's the commons that made these people rich, and they want to turn around and do nothing. So I think when you see our film, it will really fire people up. We can do something. There is legislation, and, you know, come out to the film, see it. If you're not in the area, you know, go to our website. It's we'renotbrokemovie.com. And, you know, there's a way to sign, you know, some petitions that'll hopefully, you know, start putting a stop to this. But I think we need to call these leaders out and call them out hard. No more of this nice, you know.
Right there with you. Right there with you. And we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com, and it'll get you we'renotbrokemovie.com. And, you know, I look at this company, Pepco Holding. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
We actually pay them for every dollar they make. According to the last report I saw, every dollar that they bring in, we actually pay them 58 cents.
Wow.
I mean, and I don't even know what Pepco Holding does. I mean, it's not a huge, huge company, but we pay them to be in business. How do I get a gig like that?
Well, because they're job creators, Rick. Come on, you know, we'd be lost without them. You know, I mean, something that, you know, Obama didn't say, you know, Obama didn't go after Romney for anything on the debate, but one of the things that I found so shocking was that day I had just seen one of the Bain Capital companies with their truck full of parts of a manufacturing company from the Midwest moving out to go to China.
Yep. Since
you know, as Romney is like, I care about jobs. I care about jobs for Chinese, you know, that he can pay like a dollar a day. So, you know, it's just, these are not the job creators. Anybody who calls themselves a job creator isn't. It is the small businesses that are and the domestic companies. And if Walmart wants to call themselves a job creator, the jobs that Walmart gives people, they're not even jobs.
Well,
so happy to see Walmart striking because they're another tax dodger. You don't really follow them in the movie, but they screw one state after another. It's pathetic.
Well, I mean, and Cabela's is another. I've read reports where, you know, their whole model is set up on tax subsidies. They go into areas and they get just massive handouts, which is how they built their business model. And there's something wrong with that.
I mean, states need to stand up and stop doing it to each other because it's a race to the bottom. You know, like, well, I'm going to move out of here if you don't give me a tax break. And we're going to, you know, and so they get, you know, leaders get fearful and they give them a tax break. Well, that screws mom and pop down the street. You know, all these small towns and all these, you know, closed businesses that used to thrive because you put these big businesses that not only they can't compete because they're selling all Chinese goods, they can't compete because the government's been giving them handouts. They've been giving them yours and my money.
And you look at this and you go, at some point, you know, we as the consumers, we the folks who, because I truly don't believe there are such, I don't believe there's such a thing as job creators. I think there are,
are the job creators.
Let me walk back.
We're the ones that are creating the jobs by buying things.
There
you
go. That's where I'm going. The consumers are the job creators. The person who's hiring someone is filling a demand. Because they've figured out, hey, I can make some profit off of this. This guy's going to cost me less than the money I'm going to make off of this demand. And that's what happens. And it's completely skewed the way the right keeps saying, if we keep handing money to somebody, they're going to create jobs. It's just dumb.
No, it's just dumb. It's putting money in the pockets of big-time CEOs. For the small businessman, a small job, a small tax break for hiring does not help. Taxes are paid on profit. They are not a fee that people are charged unless they make profit.
Yeah.
If you're not profitable, you don't pay taxes. If you're profitable, thank your lucky stars that you're in America and pay what, you know, you owe for being part of the system that's really made you able to survive, exist, and be profitable.
One of the small businessmen I had interviewed a couple years back, 4 or 5 years back, it was during the Bush years, he said, you know, you give me a tax cut, I'm going to Aruba. He said, what I really want as a small business owner, I want consumers. I want customers.
Right.
I want people putting cash
people
in my drawer.
Money. Yeah. Oh, Kira from Chicago says that in our film. We have this woman. She's 29. She's worked 2 jobs. She's still paying off student loans. She's paying off $20,000 in medical bills because she has some seizures. She can barely get ahead. She's a Mary Kay salesperson. And she's like, you know, this idea of giving tax breaks to these huge corporations does not help me. I need a thriving middle class who can come buy my products. She's a personal trainer and come to her gym. But now that, you know, she doesn't have customers anymore. She, you know, so, you know, that's just, you know, her job is suffering. And so many people are in that position.
Which is why you have to come out Saturday night, 6 p.m. at the Cumberland County headquarters, Democratic headquarters there, 46 Lowther Street in Carlisle. We're going to be showing We're Not Broke. We're not brokemovie.com. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com directed by Vicki Bruce. Last line I've got for you. You know, in looking at this, you know, because a lot of people think it's hopeless. They've bought into the we're broke frame. What's the one thing you want people to walk away from with this movie?
That it's time to change the system. It's not going to happen overnight. We've been in a 30-year bad relationship. We've been lied to. You know, taxes are our social and civic responsibility, and we need to come together as a community and forget the rhetoric, and let's just start rebuilding it. And we can, and there are ways, and get involved.
I like the frame, bad relationship, lied to and cheated on and all of that stuff. Good frame. Vicki Bruce, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
She is director of We're Not Broke. We're not broke. Movie.com, the website. Of course, Saturday night, 6 p.m., 46 Lowther Street, the Democratic Party headquarters there behind the post office. We're going to be showing the movie and having the conversation. Quick break. Right back after this.
You and me know it, so let's don't pretend.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So you wake up in the morning just to work and fight yourself, and then somebody tells you that you're owned by someone else. What's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app, Stitcher, or you can get the TuneIn app as well. Listen live during our live times on our other stations. And also, they've got some recordings there as well. Got an email from Richard who writes, I wish we could turn the argument around on the fiscal conservatives in Congress, call them out. What about your entitlements? What about your excessive generous pensions? He says, what? Step one, what we do? In entitlement reform? Well, that would be to eliminate the congressional pensions. He says, look, you know, how can we shame them in their hypocrisy? Publicize their pension formula. 6 years in office equals 100% pay for life. Pretty sweet, huh? Hey, Mitt, he says, would you borrow money from China for that? That's a good question. And I wonder, you know, I look at Todd Akin, and we talked about this yesterday. Todd Akin, you know, evidently, you know, made a mistake on his federal financial reports, didn't put his state pension, you know, a guy who's against, never mind, his $15,138 annual pension from the state, because he was a legislator there in Missouri for 12 years in the state house. He gets $15,000 a year for 12 years of service. That is a great freaking gig. So why doesn't he give that up? You want to talk about helping the state out? There's a good way of doing that. Well, evidently he forgot to disclose the $15,138 for a decade. Yeah, you know, it just slipped his mind. You know, that $15,138 that, you know, working people in that state and in other states who have busted their behind for those pensions live on? Hey, he forgot. Yeah, it just slipped his mind. Just completely slipped his mind. And you look at the discussion that's going on here. They really want to destroy the pensions in this state. They really have it in their mind that they're going to go after and do to the public sector what they've allowed to happen to the private sector, which is screw them with these 401ks and these defined contribution plans. They have done in the private sector a masterful job of eviscerating the defined benefit plan, which benefited people like you and me, working people, folks at the bottom. But you know, our state legislator friends, I'll bet you when they write that law, I'll bet you they'll exempt themselves. they'll probably screw the next generation of legislators, but not themselves. And I've always been a firm believer that if you're going to do something, if you're going to, you know, pursue this policy of screwing people, maybe you should be the one out front. You should take the medicine first. If you're preaching this cure, you should be the one out there doing it. And I remember when Tommy Thompson, this just popped into my head, Tommy Thompson was the Secretary of Health and Human Services under Little Shrub. And they were talking about this V-chip that they would put in your arm. It looked like the size of a kernel of rice, but it had an RFID chip in it. And they wanted, you know, kids to have it shot in their under their arm. And he said that he was going to be the first one to do it. He didn't. they tried to offer him $500,000. He didn't. But he's pitching it to other people and their kids. Nuts. Anyway, Saturday night, 6 p.m., the Democratic Party headquarters there in Carlisle, 46 Lowther Street. We're not broke, the movie. The reality is we aren't broke. We could be investing hugely. And I look at this story in Vermont. You go along the Vermont-New Hampshire border from Vernon in the south to St. Albans up in the north. And if you know that area, it is just beautiful country. They have Amtrak has their Vermonter. It's a passenger train. It just goes in beautiful areas year-round. The Recovery Act gave them about somewhere around $52 million. And they invested in that rail corridor that is now, they're saying, going to just bring a huge amount of economic activity to that area and improve the speed, improve the reliability, improve the service. And I understand, you got the right, who's, well, no, we don't want any investments in roads and bridges. Oh, they never created jobs. This got people to work. This got people paying taxes to the state. You know, things we should have done all along. We've got a governor here in Pennsylvania who has a Transportation Commission report. Says, you know what? If we don't do it now, it's going to cost us double in 7 years. It's sitting on a shelf somewhere. What's behind that? Is it ignorance? Is it stupidity? It's ideology. Which I guess you could argue, ignorance and stupidity. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Preston on line one. How are we doing tonight, Preston?
I'm doing well. Thanks, man.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just ordered a copy of We're Not Broke.
Outstanding.
I'm totally, sounds like just the sort of documentary we need more of, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's a well-done film. It goes into a lot of the details. You know, a lot of the stuff that we talk about here on the program. And as I said the last time we screened it, if you've listened to this program, probably not a lot new. There's some things that, you know, kind of highlight and get a little deeper in depth. But, you know, it's stuff that if you haven't been paying attention, boy, is it going to open your eyes.
Excellent, excellent. And yeah, I have some friends who will likely do house screenings or something like that. So, and it's so needed because the right wing, they've been pushing several documentaries that I think really deceive and disorient people. 2016 with Dinesh D'Souza, that's a real mess. And there's something called Occupy Unmasked that Andrew Breitbart's lingering production company created.
And this other one, this Won't Back Down, the Hollywood fiction movie on charter schools, another one.
I sometimes check these things out just to give them negative reviews on Amazon and plug all the progressive material. The Koch Brothers Exposed, that's a good one. That's getting pretty good distribution. I think they showed it on Link TV. Do you get Link TV where you're at?
I don't watch television, so okay. I may not. We have it, but I don't watch it.
And thanks for the heads up over Facebook regarding the, you know, Walmart workers rising up, making their voices heard. It's really good to see. I don't know if you heard, but here in Denver, we had a recent labor success story with, do you know the chain Chipotle?
Yep. We just talked to a guy from the farm workers who said that they came to an agreement with them over tomatoes.
That's right, exactly. Chipotle is sponsoring this festival in Denver tomorrow, and the Immokalee workers were getting prepared for a kind of a march there on the festival.
Fantastic.
But now there's really no need to because just, you know, a couple days before it, they decided to sign the fair trade, the fair food amendment. So,
see, now I say you go through with the march, you go through with the rally, you go through with it, you say we won.
Yeah.
And you say they're a good corporate citizen, they've agreed,
yeah.
And you tout them as, hey, these are the people you want. You got to hold people accountable, but when they do the right thing, you also got to tell people they're doing the right thing as well.
I agree. I was thinking that myself, and I was thinking, well, it should be like a celebration now. And,
absolutely.
Shaking hands and sharing stories. You know, such incredibly important work that people in the field are doing, and you know, one good thing about Chipotle is that they have always been conscientious about some of their food, you know, raising the animals in a decent way, and I think they're moving as much as they can to organics, which is huge. Something like 300,000 farm workers a year suffer some chemical poison.
Yep.
So moving away from that.
But in this country, we think, well, those aren't real workers. That doesn't matter.
That's right. And organics can't feed the world. Yes, it can. It has in the past, and we certainly don't need Monsanto taking over the food supply with their genetically modified, God knows what their mad scientists are cooking up.
Yeah, and maybe we should stop and think about when we put up these huge warehouses, these huge industrial parks, maybe we need that land for, oh, I don't know, feeding ourselves?
People are making it happen. It's a movement going on, not just, I have my issues with the Obama administration for sure, but I love what Michelle did, planting that organic garden right there in the White House. She got some nasty letter from the chemical industry.
But here again, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I talk about. If you're going to be, saying that you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk. And I give her credit. She was out there and she did that. Kudos for her. I wish the president would have done like Jimmy Carter did and put solar panels on the White House.
So true. And I wish Barack didn't have Monsanto executives at his in his Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're great people, but like a lot of us, just feeling the pressure from the corporate empire, but surf's the rising up.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. At the end of the day, Preston, it's you and me. It's our listeners. It's all the people. It's all of us together.
Yeah.
You know, they're only going to do what we make them do.
Yeah.
If we let them get away with this stuff, if we let them lie to us like Romney's doing right now, oh, I care about those 47% of the people now that I got caught.
Yeah. I agreed. Totally agreed.
I appreciate the call, Preston. Always great talking with you, brother.
Likewise, Rick. Right on. Bye-bye.
But here again, you know, you look at this. I was completely wrong about those 47% of those working people who clean up after me, and you know, the people who work at the Wawa and serve me my sandwich. You know,
I was at Wawa's. I wanted to order a sandwich. You press a little touch tone keypad, all right? You just touch that, and you know, the sandwich comes out. You touch this, go pay the cashier, there's your sandwich. It's amazing.
It's amazing. It's like magic. The sandwich just comes. There's the magical screen, and you know, this is the Romney class's perfect world. You touch something on a screen, and it appears. You don't have to deal with those workers. Those people, the rabble, the unwashed masses, don't have to deal with them. It's amazing. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the second hour of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. Also, Stitcher, take the program on the go if you've got a smartphone. We're going to take a quick break back with the third hour. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
Get up and take my hand. All they want to do is
Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
For workers at the Bainport Tent Camp outside the Sensata plant in Freeport, Illinois, watching Mitt Romney in the first presidential debate claim he will create jobs was a bitter pill to swallow. Romney's Bain Capital is shipping their jobs to China in November, and Romney is making money off of destroying those jobs. The workers have called on Romney to come talk with them to help save their jobs, but he's ignoring them. Here are Sensata workers Dot Turner, Bonnie Borman, and Tom Galrap speaking in a video about Romney's Bain Capital destroying their jobs.
Last year, Bain Capital bought our company, and we found out that our jobs were going overseas.
When they told us that our jobs would be going to China, when you first hear that, at first it's like it's unbelievable, but like you don't believe what you're hearing.
Bain sent over workers from China to learn our jobs so that they could replace us.
And it wasn't that they were losing money. It's just that they wanted to make more money.
This guy is talking about job creation, and yet the company that, not only that he founded, but that he's actually making money off of, is doing that to us.
There's something new at Walmart striking workers, Jesse Russell reports.
Thursday saw workers at Walmart stores in Southern California walk off the job to protest what they say are repeated attempts by the company to retaliate against employees who attempt to organize. The question is open as to whether or not Walmart will terminate those employees who walked off the job yesterday. Non-union workers are protected by federal law if they can prove that they went on strike to protest unfair labor practices. The strike at Walmart stores comes only 2 days after striking workers at a Walmart distribution warehouse in Elwood, Illinois, shut down that facility. That strike has been ongoing since mid-September. Those workers, also non-union, say they're protesting unsafe working conditions, low wages, and alleged sexual harassment. Efforts to organize Walmart workers have often led to the chain taking drastic measures. When meat cutters in Jacksonville, Texas, successfully organized in 2000, the company shut down in-store meat cutting at that location. A Walmart store in Quebec also successfully organized, but the company soon after closed that store. The company alleged the store didn't fit Walmart's business plan, but the Quebec Labor Board later found that the store was closed as a reprisal toward the workers for organizing.
More than 100,000 supporters of striking Walmart warehouse workers in Illinois have signed a letter demanding an end to Walmart's retaliation against those workers and improved conditions at the warehouse in Elwood, Illinois. Over 600 people rallied earlier this week and took arrests to shut down that warehouse while demanding justice for the striking workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money. Even if it's been money for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
I know that's one of Brett's favorite Ron Paul lines, which is why he plays it often. Gold is not money, evidently. Thanks, Brett. Appreciate that. Always great. Welcome back to the third hour of The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So the job numbers are in. Good, bad, how are we going to find out? I've got Mark Price, labor economist at the Keystone Research Center. Their website, thirdandstate.org. We got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick, it's wonderful to be here.
114,000 jobs, 7.8% unemployment. This is good? Yes? No?
It is about in line with what we were expecting. Probably the best way to think about today's jobs report is it's really two reports. There's a rhetorical jobs report and then the actual real one. And what I mean by rhetorical is that there was a key stat in today's number, which was that the unemployment rate fell to 7.8%. And that sort of set off a firestorm on the web and eventually on cable news, because basically it means the unemployment rate it now is finally lower than it was before President Obama took office. And that obviously is quite important because it takes away some talking points for Republicans especially. So that was sort of important, but, you know, not important in a way that really matters or is important. It's a talking point for partisans. When you come back and look at the actual jobs report, it's more in line with what we expected, which is not very good, not enough, certainly. Certainly positive in the sense that we're adding jobs. We added around 114,000, which is right in line with expectations and is barely treading water in terms of the number of jobs we need to create each month.
Well, so, what do we need to create each month to tread water, and what do we need to how many do we need to create each month to get back to full employment?
We need to be up over 150,000 a month.
That's just to keep up with demographics and the growth and the number of people getting into the job.
That's right. That's right. And what we really want, you know, if things were good and appropriate, we would want something closer to 300,000 a month. So we're nowhere near that. So, you know, I think, again, it's a jobs report that's in line with what we expected, but certainly nowhere near what we really need.
So, you know, in looking at this, you know, what could we be doing to get back to full employment? I mean, you know, I look at this report, 10,000 public sector jobs were created, were added. And you go, where were the Republicans? I mean, you know, how many months in a row have we seen job losses in the public sector? And I think it's because they were campaigning.
So they didn't have time to lay off some more teachers to make up for that?
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. Because you think of all the teachers that we've fired in this state, for instance. And I do want to talk about the state numbers if you've got them. But, you know, just in this state alone, what was it, 14,000 plus teachers and support staff that we've gotten rid of over the last year or two?
I think in 2011, the number we have is 20,000.
Wow.
You know, pretty close. And that's teachers, and that's just 20,000 is just people in elementary and secondary schools. So it's teachers, teachers' aides, and support staff. The overall public sector number is closer to 25,000 just in 2011. So when you go back over the last 2 years, you're again talking about a number up over 30,000 jobs.
And that's just in the state.
That's right, just in Pennsylvania. Nationwide, it's a number closer to around 500,000 public sector jobs lost the last couple of years. And that sort of gets back to your opening question, right? What could we be doing to make the job situation better? Certainly, we could take steps to not make it worse. And among would be avoiding laying off teachers, avoiding laying off public sector workers. Again, to make that happen, though, I mean, it's important to remember the states are in a difficult spot. Even if Pennsylvania was able to do the right thing, in other words, raise enough revenue through, say, a tax on Marcellus gas, not holding back, you know, a large surplus each year, it still wouldn't be enough to make up for the amount of money that's needed to make sure we don't lay off 20,000 teachers. We need federal support through borrowing by the federal government. But, again, that's not something that's been coming out of Congress in the last 2 or 3 years. It's basically that's one of the key things we've managed to get. Extensions of tax credits, we've managed to get even extensions of unemployment insurance, but additional aid beyond what was initially set aside in the Recovery Act for state and local governments was never forthcoming, and that's one of the reasons why the jobs picture isn't as good as it could have been, because we've basically made the situation worse.
Well, I mean, we're broke, Mark. Come on. I mean, I hear it every day. I hear John Boehner almost crying telling me we're broke.
Oh, we're not just broke. We're endangering the futures, you know, of unborn generations yet to come.
Taxmageddon, the fiscal cliff. It's all right there. Don't you see?
I don't see. But, you know, it's because I'm an economist and I'm actually trained to look at the facts, and you know.
Oh, you and your facts!
I know. Facts.
We believe.
Nowhere. We believe. No, I mean the point is now the cost of borrowing for the federal government to do the right thing is lower now than it's been in decades. Again, because private sector has yet to fully recover. Private sector firms aren't borrowing as much as they used to. The end result is that it's very cheap to borrow money now, and you can borrow that money, put it to good use, either helping state and local governments or repairing those bridges that you have to pray as you're driving across, right? You could use that money that way. That'll help spur job creation, help boost the amount of jobs we're creating each month and help get us back to full employment faster. And then once we're there at full employment, you can then take steps to make sure that you pay back what you had to borrow. It's a pretty common sense and a straightforward approach, but it's not one that's had enough support in Congress to get through and become law. We're basically stuck in the situation where we're doing as much as we can to make the situation worse as opposed to better.
Yeah, a common sense for someone like you, someone who believes in facts. See, you got to understand, common sense for you, one of those people who has to have facts and doesn't believe like us. Because we believe that if we give all of the money to the very top, that their pockets will eventually fill and something will trickle out.
Then we can
fight over that. And the job creators, if we give them massive tax breaks, they will create jobs out of the goodness of their hearts, because that's just the kind of people they are.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, that's an excellent summary. And, you know, we got a picture of that today when the jobs report came out. Like I said, there was that sort of rhetorical talking point for the Obama administration that, you know, unemployment now is at 7.8%. And an immediate reaction by a former CEO, a guy who's been described as America's CEO, no less, Jack Welch, you know, he put out a little tweet saying, you know, oh, my goodness, these people, they can't win debates, so they're going to manipulate the job numbers. And that set off this sort of firestorm, both on the web, but eventually even on cable news, where there's all sorts of stuff going around about, oh, the numbers are being juked. The Labor Department is just trying to make sure that the president gets elected. And that comes back to what you were saying, right? We are at this stage in this country where a rational, careful debate about facts, about what's the right thing to do, about what do we know about past policy, all of that's out the window. And basically we're in this very bizarre environment where it's okay to say stuff that basically makes absolutely no sense. You know, we have a lot of data on the job market, and you don't have to work hard to make it look bad. And the notion that, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is out there, you know, fudging the numbers to help the Obama administration is, you know, just insane. But nonetheless, America's CEO, you know, feels entitled to say that, and you get a firestorm that follows. It's depressing in a lot of ways.
The guy who, in his golden parachute retirement plan, gets fresh flowers in all four of his GE-paid-for residences for the rest of his life.
Does he really get fresh flowers?
Fresh flowers every... the only reason you know this is because when he got divorced from his wife, you should see the things this guy got from GE. It is mind-blowing. I mean, most people, they don't even get a thank you when they leave. This guy got fresh flowers. He got tickets to every Red Sox and Yankees game. You name it, he got it. Corporate jets, all this stuff. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And here's this guy saying, well, these are unbelievable job numbers. And this is the part that got me about his tweet. These Chicago guys will do anything. What Chicago guys is he talking about? Those Chicago economists who brought us this insane economic model, the Milton Friedmans of the world? Are those the Chicago guys he's talking about?
No, I don't think so. I think he means thugs.
Well, there you go. Nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, Rick. It's just, you know, the fact that the guy gets fresh flowers in his four houses, right, as part of his retirement package, you know, after running General Electric is sort of another, you know, wonderful illustration of what's wrong with this economy, right? You know, we have very high unemployment. There are lots of things we could do to set it straight, borrow a little bit of money, help boost employment and boost spending on infrastructure, but, you know, we're not doing that. Instead, we have high unemployment. Wage growth is restrained, poverty is rising, and the only folks who are actually accumulating and capturing most of the growth in incomes, both in the United States and in Pennsylvania, are this very tiny fraction of people at the top, you know, the 1%.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, people like Jack Welch, and it's just remarkable, both that they accumulate this vast amount of income, but also that they're basically, you know, doddering old fools, making all sorts of, you know, bizarre statements to the press and to the rest of the world.
Yeah, but what do you say to the argument, and the right wing makes the argument that, you know, because of Jack Welch's his pension and this wonderful perk that he gets of fresh flowers, since we seem to be stuck on that, that creates jobs. I mean, there's a florist who now has a job to supply him, four of them actually, in four different locations that supply his home with fresh flowers.
You know, instead of buying Jack Welch flowers, a lot of that money could have gone to pay for people's higher wages, could have gone to pay pensions, health care, and would have trickled out of the economy anyway. I think there's actually a good reason to argue that really we're better off if more of the money was spread throughout the bottom half of the income distribution, the people who actually work for a living, because they spend most of that money, and that helps filter out into the economy. That one of the problems that we might have as a result of the economic crisis is that a lot of income is being captured by these very high-income households, and it's not being translated into spending in the economy, or often necessarily even into productive investment.
So should we be talking about redistribution of wealth?
I think the most important thing we should talk about, there's a lot of conversation about redistribution and taxes, and I think all of that conversation, you know, I don't want to dismiss that it's completely unimportant, but the much more important impact on people's lives is what, and I apologize in advance for saying this on the radio, it's the pre-tax distribution of income. So the incomes that are earned before taxes are where most inequality is in our society. So the issue is very much about people's paychecks, about the wages that they're earning on the job, rather than necessarily about the taxes that they're paying. Again, I don't want to dismiss that it's, you know, the importance of having a fair and equitable tax code. But at the end of the day, if we're going to get out of the mess that we're in, it requires an economy that generates wage growth, not just at the top, but throughout the distribution for folks at the bottom and in the middle. And when you get that kind of growth, you don't have the explosion of inequality that we've seen. In fact, you know, what I think we would need really is more growth in the middle and the bottom to really sort of move us back to where we should have been. So I guess my point would be, you know, I would focus less on redistribution and more on making sure that workers have more bargaining power.
Yeah, I see. I think redistribution is, you look at the Walmart family, for instance, they have as much wealth as almost 42% of the people in this country.
Right.
If you redistribute that to the other 42%, maybe a little bit of it, by better wages, by a whole bunch of different things,
right.
We all go up.
I think the way in which to get there is, again, making sure that workers who are at Walmart end up getting better wages, you know, a livable wage, health care, and a pension.
Which is why they went on strike, which is why they're out in the streets, and why we're seeing a lot of these actions across the country. I'm right there with you. Mark, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. You always make me laugh.
Oh, well, I'm glad I can be entertaining.
Mark Price, labor economist at the Keystone Research Center. Third and State is their blog. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Mark's name. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education. We're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st century infrastructure. We're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all. We're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for this free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to thericksmithshow.com.
Ah, Timmy boy, we hardly knew ye. Tim Pawlenty, that is, the rather moderate former governor of Minnesota. He had made a radical change in his political persona last year, deliberately yanking his views and rhetoric to the far right in the vain hope that he might become this year's GOP presidential nominee. But he didn't catch on with the party's red meat right-winger, so Pawlenty was out before most Americans even knew he was in. After losing, he double-clutched and shifted again, becoming co-chair of Mitt Romney's campaign, a guy he had dissed as not a real conservative during the spring primaries. But being a Mitt bobblehead was a nothing position. Once again, then, Pawlenty departed before anyone knew he was there, or who he is. So, no doubt, you and other inquiring minds are dying to know where the ever-shifting what's-his-name has shifted to now. I can help you with that. Tim has gone deeper into the political darkness where even fewer people will see him. He's the new top lobbyist in Washington for Wall Street. Pawlenty will head up the powerful but obscure Financial Services Roundtable. And, once again, he had to shift his views dramatically to get there. Only last year, he was blasting the giant banks for their massive government bailouts and insider deals. He demanded that they get their snout out of the trough. And now, he's the snout-in-chief, in charge of filling the trough with special goodies for the Wall Street powers. Asked about the irony, or dare we say hypocrisy, of this rebuker of Wall Street becoming his primary Washington defender, the roundtable's former chief simply quoted an old inside-the-beltway axiom, "Where you stand depends on where you sit." This is Jim Hightower saying, "So at long last, we know who Tim is. The poster boy of Washington's ethic of flexibility." Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get paid too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Oh, yes, God is a Republican. At least that's what the Republicans will tell you. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So, Daryl Metcalf, the insaniac here in the General Assembly here in Pennsylvania. You know, your typical right-wing loon, right-wing crank, which most people for years kind of just, you know, marginalized. He's, yeah, the fringe character. Now he's actually chairman of a couple of committees, and you go, he's been around long enough to actually get a chairmanship. So I saw this story. WHTM locally, the TV station locally, reported that there was a hearing going on, and it's, you know, just your basic, you know, normal, you know, house hearing, and Metcalf, who is really still stinging over the voter suppression being shot down for this election, had to do something to kind of save face. And what's interesting is he went after a Republican judge who I guarantee you will never forget. It was Durrell who took the shot at him. So, you know, I guess there's part of me that goes, you know, the reason he did this was kind of maybe to deflect something from that, or maybe just to make himself feel good. But he put Representative Babette Josephs on the spot. Now, anybody who knows that she has not said the Pledge of Allegiance out loud, well, according to her, since 1954. And he said, well, we're going to have Representative Joseph lead us in the pledge, knowing she's not going to do it, and creating this situation. Now, from someone who doesn't know she doesn't do it, you would think, oh, my gosh, this is shocking. So she stands up, she goes, no, based on my First Amendment rights and based on the fact that I think it's really a prayer and I don't pray in public, I'm not doing it. She said, I don't do it. It's a prayer. When they put, in 1954, when they put it in, it's a prayer. And I kind of agree with her. You know, I agree to, you know, pledge allegiance to the flag, the country, you know, we love the country and all that. Once you start putting religion into this, I have a problem. Because not all people believe the same that I do. And what if I believed something different? Oh, I know, I'm a Christian nation. Which is why I think Daryl is still stinging over the fact that his House Resolution 535 declaring this year the year of the Bible made its way to court, U.S. District Court, in fact. The people from Freedom From Religion Foundation had filed a lawsuit against State Representative Rick Saccone, Republican, back in March when they did this. Well, U.S. District Judge Christopher Connor came out and said, at the end of the day, and this was on Monday, I've been holding this for the whole week, he said, look, he threw the case out. He said, because it had the General Assembly had legitimate immunity and couldn't be sued. Despite dismissing the lawsuit, though, Connor, I mean, you want to talk about a stinging rebuke? He said that his decision stated that the nation needs to study and apply the teachings of the Holy Scripture. He said, but regardless of the motivations behind H.R. 535, its express language is proselytizing and exclusionary. He said the court is compelled to shine a clear, bright light on this resolution because it pushes the Establishment Clause envelope behind the safety glass of legislative immunity. Now, for me, I thought it was dumb from the beginning. Why do you get into that? There are so many things that we haven't done. Roads, bridges, schools, all that. That we could be working on. This was important. And it just shows how the religious right in this country, because most of the people I know on the left who are religious, and I know a lot of religious people on the left, who, like me, you go to church, you believe, you try to lead a decent life, you follow those 10 rules, you're the best you can, but you're not out there, trying to ram your beliefs down someone else's throat. You're not out there trying to change what people are doing to do what you want them to do. And I look at this and I go, there's a fundamental difference in belief structure. And I just saw this, according to the Los Angeles Times, there's going to be a new television network. Another one of these right-wing Christian groups came up with a boatload of money. It's the Christian TV network. They're preparing for live coverage. And I love this because it's evidently Jesus is coming back and we didn't know it. Yep, they're preparing for live coverage, and they're going to be on the air waiting for that live coverage. Wow. And the other thing is they're going to bring in a ton of money to do it. I mean, there's just tons of money in it. And, I look at this and I go, there's so much better things you could be doing. Oh, I don't know, like the people of the Church of England who had recently submitted a comment to the Parliament against this LIBOR rate-rigging scandal. They said, look, at the end of the day, you need to be held accountable. They write, the question is not whether the systems have been adequate to identify and deal with the bad apples, but whether the whole orchard needs to be replaced. They say to achieve this is not just a matter of technical fixes, but may require public corporate contrition for past failings. And possibly some symbolic step to assure that, it doesn't happen again, that the culture has changed. And all of this outward religiosity on all sides of the spectrum, to me, is dangerous. I'm a big believer. You keep your faith to yourself. Much like Beth Joseph, she's like, look, the under God thing makes it a prayer. I don't pray in public. It's not that she doesn't pray. She just doesn't do it in public. But it's all of this demonizing of religion. I think it was last week when these two San Francisco radio shock jocks, if you will, came out and said, post on, I think it was on Al Jazeera's website, negative depictions of Muhammad. go get those people all upset. You know, tell them to grow up. And you look at the fact that this kind of insensitivity, intolerance, this kind of lack of concern of other people's thoughts, and I know I've heard it all before. Oh, you know, Rick, they don't care about ours. And as my mother always said, you know, if someone else is stupid, do you have to be stupid too? The hope is no. And you look at the number of these religious crimes that are going on, these acts of violence against mosques and houses of worship, it's insane. And you've seen, you know, a skyrocketing. I mean, it has hit a 10-year high. And it's all of this rhetoric. It's all of the, I saw this mailer from the Faith and Freedom Coalition. It was titled the Voter Registration Confirmation Survey. And I was looking at some of the questions on here. You know, do you think Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro see President Obama as their ally? I mean, is that really a Christian question? But that's what the Faith and Freedom Coalition thought was an important question. Do you think leftists like Congressman John Dingell, Nancy Pelosi, and Barack Obama are truly looking to improve health care quality and affordability in America? Or do you think they are mostly using government to take over health care as a way to control your life? My favorite one, though. My favorite one was, how much danger do you think liberty is in right now as a result of Obama's policies, actions, and agenda for America's future? Answer number one. Pick as many as you'd like. More serious than the threats we faced in World War II from Nazi Germany and the Japanese, because the attacks on liberty today are from our own government. This is the crap that our religious community is shoveling to their followers. This is scary stuff. So when someone like Glenn Beck goes on the radio or on TV, on his internet show and goes, you know what? God wants Romney behind in the polls because he wants to prove that miracles are still possible. And I go, what? Are you insane? And sadly, many in the religious community, I'm afraid, have lost touch with reality. But it is, well, I guess the last question, question number 16, is the most important. And with all of this, I keep going back to organized religion is probably one of the biggest cons there's ever been. It's a way to get into your pocket. It's a way to rob you blind. Question number 16 of the grand survey, will you send your best emergency freedom-saving donation right now to the Faith and Freedom Coalition to help fund a $31.1 million battle plan to Dr. Ralph Reed? The same Ralph Reed who, well, was tied up with Jack Abramoff and all of the Indian gambling and all of the shenanigans and all of the stuff that went on there. But you know what? He's godly. So we might send him money. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Of red, Rick Smith.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Earth, sky.
Today, Stanford University biologist Paul Ehrlich. He's famous for his 1968 book, The Population Bomb. Like many before him, Ehrlich told Earth Sky that equal opportunities for women might be key to maintaining Earth's population at a reasonable level.
One of the things, for example, that we can do maybe to totally solve the population problem and get our population gradually shrinking is to give full rights to all women everywhere. Make sure they have the same pay, all the same opportunities, and so on.
Ehrlich and other population experts point out that women with the same opportunities as men tend to have fewer children. That's already happened in many places on Earth. In 2003, for the first time in human history, more than half the women in the world lived in places where the rate of reproduction was below the replacement level. That is, those women were having fewer children than the number required to replace themselves in the next generation. That's what equal opportunities for women seems to do, and it's important according to Paul Ehrlich.
The best estimates we can make are that with present technologies, you might be able to support 1.5 billion people permanently on the planet, and we are 7 now, and we're going to add, if the projections are correct, 2.5 billion people by 2050.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
I got to tell you, I still wish Tricky Ricky was the guy. I wish Tricky Ricky was president, the nominee. I wish he was, or at least VP. At least Romney would have chosen Santorum to be the VP because, you know, just absolute soundbite gold. I mean, really stop and think about it. Just absolute soundbite gold.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've voted to kill Big Bird in the past. So I have a record there that I have to disclose. That doesn't mean I don't like Big Bird. I mean, you know, you can kill things and still like them. I mean, maybe to eat them, I don't know. But that's probably that. Can we go back on that
beautifully badly phrased. I think we should end on that note, just to let you feel really uncomfortable.
That's
you can kill things but still like them. Rick Santorum. What a perfect way to end the interview.
There you go. You can kill things if you still like them. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the country. I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, you can kill things. You know, you can still like them, though. You know, it is what it is.
He's the gift that gives that keeps on giving,
I miss him. I miss the whole Republican primary field. I miss all of the Herman. I miss the McCain train. I miss the crazy one from Minnesota. Just all of them. Perry and Paul.
You're going to have withdrawal after this campaign.
I am. I miss the oops. I would have loved to have seen more oops, but, you know, I guess all the good things have to come to an end.
And so did our crazy year.
Yeah, well.
We only have a month to go.
Well, you know, I'm getting ready for the big push down the stretch here, ready to get this over with and start the fight of, you know, while the campaign, when that winds down, the real fight then begins. You know, how do we make sure that, you know, we don't see massive tax increases on working people? And how do we make sure we solve our deficit in a sane, rational, responsible way instead of saying we're going to continue to give massive handouts to the top and slash and burn everybody else?
Yeah, well, that's the question of the day. And there's a lot of slashing and burning being carried out these days.
So a lot of spin going on around the debate the other night. You know, I happened to see this Phil Gingrey, the Republican from Georgia. He was on, he was on CNN, and it's one of these things that, you know, I talked about earlier. Is it common knowledge that, you know, campaigns go from both sides? They were for something before they were against it, and then they went back? I mean, because the argument that Gingrey was making is, well, of course he's going to, you know, say one thing in the primary and then completely change his opinion in the election, move far to the left. It just doesn't seem to make
well,
much sense.
Well, what he's trying to do is to say, you know, I'm not the same guy that you saw during the primary. Now I'm going to, you know, I know how to reach the middle of the American people. That is what he's trying to do, for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a nice try, nice try, but, you know, at some point, don't the people that voted for him have to go, wait a minute, I feel cheated?
Well, yes, but they are so dislikeful. That's not a word. They so dislike Obama that they're willing to look over everything.
Yeah, it's all about the black guy in the White House. I know. Yeah, I mean, it's sad. But you know what's interesting is, you know, even some of the writers saying, you know, Romney's going to say just about whatever it takes to get in there. And that's kind of what Gingrich was saying. Look, you know, whatever it takes. You know, he's going to be everything to everybody, and then he'll do what he should do because, you know, he is to the right. Which seems kind of nonsensical to me.
They want to get him elected. They're willing to do anything. And so interesting that today we actually heard from three different campaign people. Jen Psaki, who is often travels with the president and with the press secretary as the person from the campaign. David Plouffe from the Obama campaign and Ben LaBolt. I mean, she was basically saying that Romney was willing to do and say anything. And she said they were surprised at Romney's unique relationship to the truth Wednesday night. And she also said we're prepared for what Romney is going to go say over the next 28 days. David Plouffe from the campaign says the media wants to write a comeback story for Romney. And Ben LaBolt from the campaign said they want to make sure that everyone understands the positions Mitt Romney danced around Wednesday night in the debate.
Did you see the comment that he made that, you know, he was wrong about the 47% thing?
I mean, did see that.
Do you buy that? I mean, because
but
really,
it took him a while to get there.
Well, do you believe it? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you're talking about a guy who will say and do anything, he seemed to me, you know, he said afterwards that he was inarticulate and, you know, he used the wrong word. He seemed very articulate to me. Didn't stumble, didn't stammer, didn't stutter. The words flowed right out with such great ease. I think he meant every word he said.
It's amazing how many things you'll go back and say when you're videotaped.
That's a good point. You know, one of the things I thought was interesting, and again, you know, the president, I don't know what was in his water, or maybe Gore was right, it was the altitude, but when there was a moment where Obama had talked about, you know, shipping jobs overseas and giving them special tax breaks, and Romney said, look, you know, I've been in business 25 years and I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm thinking about this and I'm going, well, if you don't know that, a guy who has shipped jobs out of this country throughout your time at Bain Capital, there's something wrong or you're lying.
Lying.
Yeah, okay, well, that was an easy answer then.
Right.
So what do you think's gonna? What do you think? What's your prediction for the upcoming vice presidential debate?
I actually think that the vice president, you know, the Republicans like him because they says he makes so many gaffes. Well, you know what? He may make some gaffes or whatever. Everybody expects him to say what's on his mind. He's a good debater. He's very smart, and I think he's probably going to clean Ryan's clock.
Yeah, well, I think Ryan's going to look like what he is, you know, a petulant child. I mean, that's how I see him, is that kid that, you know, sat in the sandbox and just, you know, screamed when he didn't get his toys.
Right.
You know, when someone else touched his toy, he was the kid in the sandbox who, you know, basically wet himself and cried.
I love the way you put it.
Well, I mean,
I can tell you're a talk show host the way your words are. They make me laugh.
Well, you look at him, and I got to be honest, he looked like an LMV. He looks like an LMV to me. He looks like a lunch money victim. And now he's got a little bit of power, and he's an evil, nasty little snot who needs to get somebody a little backhand every once in a while. Like my grandfather always said, sometimes you need to give somebody a backhand every once in a while, make a citizen out of them. That's what he needs, I think. Just my thought.
Well, I think he's going to get one from the vice president.
Well, I'm hoping, and I'm looking forward that that's going to be on October the 11th. So we'll be looking forward to that. Also, you know, go back. Romney's going to create all these jobs. You know, I go back to his Bain Capital time and the time he, you know, the jobs he claims he created. You know, the Sports Authority, the Domino's Pizza, and the Staples. He claims he created 100,000 of those. A lot of people saying no. But even if that's the case, are those the kind of jobs we're going to be able to grow an economy on? Are those the family-sustaining jobs of the 21st century?
Well, obviously, we used to really do incredibly well in manufacturing. That somehow went overseas. Now, where we really can do extremely well is technology. But Mr. Romney does not want to put the investment that the president wants to in technology and education.
And alternative energy seems to want to give a whole bunch of money to oil companies, but, you know, start thinking about investing in the future. And a guy who claims that he, you know, he was a visionary and he was the, you know, the capitalist who invested, and I'm kind of missing that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Romney went after him at least twice, maybe three times, during the debate on what he did with energy money, clean energy. But that is the wave of the future. I mean, look what other countries are doing.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you know, what frustrated me watching that debate is the president basically let him go with that. When you look at the companies, there have been three companies that have failed that they've invested in. Three. Out of the 26 that they've invested in, there are three that failed. I think that's a decent track record.
It does. Yes.
I mean, especially when you're talking about a technology that we're getting creamed because of our insane trade policies and the fact that we're allowing China to manipulate. And one of the things I agree with Romney on, I don't believe him when he says he'll call them a trade manipulator or a currency manipulator. I don't believe him. But, you know, it's one of
I mean, he's saying the right things about that, but obviously he didn't care when he was head of bank.
Exactly. You know, it just is what it is. So, you know, I look at the numbers, job numbers today. Is this a good thing for the president? I think it is. Thoughts?
Well, it's a good thing in that it's going absolutely in the right direction. As the president said, they were losing something like 800,000 jobs a month when he took over. And, look, is it the 150,000 jobs we need to have a month? No. But you know what? We have not had a recession.
Oh, we will. If Romney's, if Romney's elected with Mr. Austerity, we will have a recession. I guarantee that. I mean, if they enact the policies that they keep saying that they want, we're screwed. I mean, all of you right-wingers who are burying rice and guns in the backyard, you better keep it up if Romney's president.
My cousin's one of them.
Yeah, I know a bunch of people who, you know, it's coming. You know, the big this and that's coming, and they're burying rice and guns everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's one in every family. I have one of mine.
Well, you've got the guy who thinks coal is a four-letter word.
I do.
I'm sorry. I just find that so funny. I'm sorry. That's probably not really nice, is it? But anyway, the unemployment rate down to the lowest since Obama has taken office. And look, like you said, it's in the right direction. So the debate October 11th, foreign policy. And here's my thought on this is, look, I hope the right Obama shows up, the guy who showed up the day after. I would show up with my I Killed Bin Laden t-shirt on and the you know, with the finger pointing, I'm with stupid, the guy who went over to London and insulted them. I think that's where I would go. Thoughts?
Well, I think that's not a bad place to go. I think that, first of all, I think that the vice president will probably try and outthink the Paul Ryan, and I think he's very good at it. Don't forget, he had years in the Senate, and that is a debate organization. And I think it's going to show through. I think it's going to be a very, you know, everybody poo-poos the vice president. They just don't understand the guy.
Yeah. Well, I like the guy. I like him a lot. I mean, he does, you know, when you're someone who says what you're thinking, sometimes you're not thinking right. And sometimes things just come out, like Santorum. I mean, you know, sometimes you kill things.
Oh,
you
I
like.
Do miss him. What is he going to be doing, working for a law firm now?
Oh, he'll be a shill. He'll get a nice think tank job like he did before. He was working for some defense policy institute for a while, and that's the thing I give the right credit for. You know, they get these crazy people who go out way on the fringe, but they take care of them because they know, you know, as far out on the fringe as they go, you know, they're still pulling everybody else just a little bit behind them. And, you know, they keep setting the goalposts further and further to the extreme, and they take care of their own. I mean, when Scott Walker gets booted in Wisconsin, he's going to be well taken care of.
Well, and even when Tommy Thompson loses there.
Well, that's the hope. That's the hope. So what's going on in Syria? I see there's...
Well, you know, what's really interesting. The Syrian, the Security Council condemned Syria, basically, in no uncertain terms. However, they did caution Syria and Turkey to not act in a manner that would upset the other country at this point.
Right.
The United States said that they stand shoulder to shoulder with Syria. because Syria is part of NATO. And the question is whether NATO is going to act at all.
See, and I don't think we should be involved in it. I think you let them take care of it. That's what that's for.
Right.
And that's where my thought is. You have this international force. Let them deal with it. We're not the world's cop. We got to stop doing that stuff. Here's some resources. Here's a little money. Here's a couple of bombs. There you go. Good luck. Let us know how it works.
Yes. Well, I mean, that is what NATO is for.
Look, I mean, you know, Alan, here's the reality. You know, I grew up in a really crappy area, in probably one of the worst areas in the city of Cleveland. And I remember those guys coming back from Vietnam. I saw what war did to poor people. They dumped those guys back into my community like they were trash. And you saw, from the time I was a kid up till the time I was a teenager living in that area, every time you saw that heavy army green coat, it was somebody who was either an alcoholic, a drug addict, someone who was missing an arm or a leg, or their minds were just completely gone.
Exactly. And you and I are both from the same town, and we both saw the same thing.
And I don't ever want to see that again. Now, look, does it make me a pacifist? Does it make me soft on defense? No. But it makes me thoughtful before we get ourselves into these misadventures. Just
100%. And that is why we do have NATO in Europe, and they are a member of NATO. They have some ability to make the kinds of changes they need to make there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, well, Federal Trade Commission going after somebody?
Yes, they went after this Artist Arena. It's a website, and apparently they give information on various celebs and where they live and all that kind of stuff. Well, they were also publishing information on their children. Federal Trade Commission said there is a law. You cannot do that for children under 13, and they are fining them.
No, they shouldn't fine them. I'm against fining them. I'm all in favor of, you know, doing like they do in Korea, cane them. Just take them out back and say, you should have some sense.
Right. It's pretty unbelievable.
I think a beating is much better than a fine. Much, much better.
Well,
you remember
whatever.
That kid? Remember
they
that kid?
Decided to go after them.
Remember that kid a couple of years ago that spray painted cars over in Korea? And
yeah.
And it was a big stink that they were going to cane him. I'm all in favor of that. I'll bet you that kid never spray paints another car. And lastly, the Sunland. Some more recalls?
Yes. As you know, there was a peanut butter recall, and now they are recalling a lot of other products that were made at the same time. I don't know, it was maple butter, a bunch of the different kinds of things. And so if you have a product that is made by Sunland, you should just throw it out, they're saying. And a lot of this stuff actually did come from Trader Joe's.
Nice. And why is it bad? I mean,
I think it got contaminated with salmonella.
Salmonella. Great. Salmon Dave disease.
And they said anything from 2010, I guess, on.
Wow. Are you going to get any of your money back, or are you just out of luck? Just throw it out.
I think
you're out of luck.
Right.
Alan, always great talking with you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Our good friend, Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're a proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. If you own a small business like me, You don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do is hard in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers, backstabbers. It's hard in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, I just love Rick Santorum.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've voted to kill Big Bird in the past. So I have a record there that I have to disclose. That doesn't mean I don't like Big Bird. I mean, you know, you can kill things and still like them.
Yeah, you can kill things and still like them. What a weirdo. And I shouldn't say that. That's one of those scenarios. That's one of those situations where, you know, he probably got himself into it. He's trying to defend Romney. He's trying to, you know, he's trying his best, and his best is well that. And you know, you just start digging, and you don't know where to stop. Andy sent me an email during the break talking about Ralph Reed. Says the man should be in prison or twirling pizzas somewhere with Jack Abramoff, not on David Gregory's show, Meet the Fascists. Oh, wow, Meet the Fascists. That's a good one. I generally call it Meet the Depressed because, you know, you listen to them and it just makes you depressed because, yeah, they're just pushing that ideology. Sad stuff. But I think Andy's right. You know, you look at Ralph Reed, ultimate opportunist. You know, religion, if you've seen the story about Ralph Reed, you know, one of those... You know, I have a couple of friends who... You know, had horrible drug and alcohol problems. They were alcoholics. They were drug addicts. You know, they went through the grand conversion, and now they have traded the drug of, you know, heroin or crack or alcohol for the drug of religion. And they're just as obsessed and they're just as addicted. Only they're not as interesting to be around, to be honest. Anyway, Randall points out, he sent me an email during the break, and of course you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. He said, my brother pointed out that these Republican issues like religion cost next to nothing, except possibly the abortion issue. And of course the military buildup would be a major expense. Look, the Republican issues are not about solving problems, they're about dividing us. It's that simple. It's about keeping us at each other's throats and keep pushing the frame, like the frame that we're broke. We're not broke. And tomorrow, Saturday night, 6 p.m., the Cumberland County Democratic headquarters, we're going to be screening the movie We're Not Broke. You want to check out the trailer and you want to check out what it's about, We're Not Broke movie.com. We've got a link at the RickSmithShow.com Again, you can email me. Let me know what you think, thoughts, comments, whatever's on your mind. Always there. And, of course, if you missed any portion of our program, go to the website, thericksmithshow.com. Grab the podcast or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Just, you know, another one of those great nights. Have a good one. We'll see you back here on Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous.